Tonight on The Download, former SNL cast member Horatio Sanz. From the Gateway Foundation, CEO Tom Britton. And we play the worst with Scott Goldstein and Mars Timms. Now, here's your host, a man who is glad the home openers are over, Justin Kaufman.
Too much fanfare. Too much. Too much Sister Jean. Oh, what did I say? Can't say. Hey, everybody. Justin Kaufman here. It's a download with you till 11 o'clock. 720 WGN. Got a great show lined up. Yeah, the home openers. Not so great for the Chicago teams. Both teams lose their home openers. The White Sox did it in dramatic fashion when they lost in extra innings. The Cubs, the game was kind of over by the third. But you know what? It's upstart Pirates. Who would have thought, right? Those Pirates. A fun day. Sister Jean, the Loyola Ramblers up at Wrigley. So much going on there. It's amazing. I had a chance to go to the game today. I just went for the first couple innings. That's, you know, that's how you do it in Chicago. When you get to a certain level, when you're hosting, you know, late night radio, you just do a couple innings. You make yourself, what you want to do is you give a little, you know, a little nod, a little wave, a wink and a nod. You get to maybe when they start talking about Connie's Pizza, and then you're like, you know what? This is going to be my time. Let everybody know. And that was it. I did learn something. And this is what I learned from my friend Jim, who had an extra ticket today for the game. He told me, he goes to the game a lot, that the red vines, which come around with the vendors, the red vine vendor it's a one-time thing. If you miss the red vine vendor, you're not going to see him again. So if you want red vines, you got to get them right away. That's the plan. That's what I learned today about Wrigley Field.
Is that true?
He just said that he goes to a lot of games, been to a lot of games, and he told me, he's like, there's one vendor who does red vines. They come through. If you miss it, forget about it. They're not coming back again.
Because they're all gone?
I think it's just it's minimal, and it's the same with cotton candy.
I don't know. I would think about buying more red vines.
Yeah, if you see the red vine guy, grab him because you're not going to see him again.
But I mean, as a vendor, I would get more red vines and keep
everybody wants them, right?
Yeah.
Right. Although I would have thought the same thing. Hot dogs, beer. Oh my gosh, beer. It's like $2.90. Like, it's just like the expressway of beer. So much beer. I was asked if I wanted a beer 45 times in an inning. There's a lot of beer. I got the beer. But the red vines, no. Tough to get.
That's a good tip.
It's a good tip, right? So if you see the vendor with the red vines, jump on. Even if you don't want red vines right now, jump on them now, because there's no guarantee he'll be back.
Buy a bunch, and then in the eighth inning, go around yourself and jack up the price.
Right. And just tell people, hey, they don't sell red vines after the seventh inning here. I don't want you hopped up on all that sugar. It's genius. Tonight on the show, Download Chicago Business, Una Creamer, two sisters are starting a new vegan plant-based coffee creamer to disrupt the coffee creamer business. We'll talk with them about why they left their high-powered financial jobs to move into this venture. Those are our guests coming up here in the Download Chicago Business. 8 o'clock tonight, we'll talk with the Gateway Foundation about the opioid crisis, and we will talk with Dr. Thomas Britton and one of their patients, who will tell their story with addiction and recovery and the on and off roller coaster that is their life. So that'll come up 8 o'clock tonight. 9 o'clock, Horatio Sanz will be here with Joe Nunez. You know it's opening day in Chicago when those boys are in town. They always jump. They came in through when it was playoff time a couple years ago, maybe last year, maybe the year before. They've been on a few times here on the Download. It's always great to have both of them in studio. Horatio's doing a big SNL conversation with Richard Roper at the Museum of Broadcast Communications coming up on Thursday. And then we'll play the worst tonight. It's Tuesday night, you guys. We have a Tuesday night, and we have the worst. Scott Goldstein and Mars Timms will be here, 312-981-7200. Of course, we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. You know what's the worst? Saline solution. I know on surface you're like, no, it's fine. It's a clear solution. No, it's too expensive. Just keeps getting more and more expensive. I wear contacts. Oh, the worst.
How about like
$11.99 for a thing of a bottle, which maybe lasts you 3 weeks.
Wow, that's expensive.
It's too expensive. I don't know what's happening. I don't know if this is,
it's like somebody like Martin Shkreli behind this
thing. I don't know if
this
is a Shkreli thing, what's going on, but the worst is the price of saline solution. There, I set the tone. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break, we'll come back, and we will do the carryout, so stay with us. All right, it is The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. All right, here are today's top stories. Well, yesterday's raid on President Trump's lawyer looks to be about a couple ladies. Or, of course, hush money payments to said ladies. This according to inside sources familiar with the case. Okay, so the guy Johnny, who works in the cubicle next to you. Trump and his lawyers' lawyers are still calling the raids unnecessary and putting a political spin on the FBI and Mueller and everything else. And is it just me? Or does the media seem to be just kind of goading the president to firing Mueller? Do it. Do it. Please. We'll get so many eyeballs on this slideshow, on the Mueller slideshow. But if this raid was really just about... But if this raid was really just about Stormy, that really? Next. I think Dems would be hypocrites if you tried to intellectualize this scandal the same way Republicans did with Monica Lewinsky. Maybe he used campaign money, but if we learned anything about Trump, it's that he's probably got loose change in several different pockets. Just, you know, he probably used campaign funding to buy those filet of fish as well, or the taco salad in the Trump cafeteria. I don't know what to tell you. Get him on something bigger than hush money to a porn star. And I can't believe I just said that, but I said it. And once again, it's not the crime, but it's a cover-up, President. So, back to reality. Russian officials say if the U.S. strikes Syria in retaliation for chemical weapons attacks, they will attack the U.S. military. Yep, nothing to see here, folks. Move along. Back to Stormy. This is such a complicated issue, and everyone knows it, except with Trump, he knows it, and then he manipulates it to his followers for political gain. It's not black and white. Assad is backed by Russia and Iran. If you take out Assad for what he's done to his people, then you risk ISIS taking over Syria and, of course, Syrian resources. Or you commit to a long-term American military presence in Syria, just like Iraq, which is exactly what Trump campaigned against. It's not a good situation. And the minute you take out Syria's government, you thought you had a Syrian refugee crisis right now? Whoa. So lots of nuanced issues here that seem to center around getting Russia to back down. Well, maybe this is the president for the job. Hashtag back channels. Do your thing. Closer to home, the lawmakers are back in Springfield for a grueling 2 months called the spring session. The sacrifice they make for a paycheck. Then they'll get the summers off. So don't worry. If you had a little tinge of empathy for these guys, they get the summers off. The session also feels like a serious broken record as the governor outlined his desire to A, roll back the income tax, and B, impose term limits on lawmakers. Wow. Governor Rauner seems like he's like Rocky Balboa in Rocky III when he keeps telling Clubber Lane, and who in this metaphor is Springfield, but, hit me, hit me, you ain't so bad, hit me again, hit me again. In Rocky III, Balboa uses this very realistic tactic to tire out Clubber Lane, but in my metaphor, I'm not sure there's going to be a round two. So, also, state funding was released today. State funding money, it's hard to say. Pizza party in the gym. Everybody got their cash. Free nacho cheese sauce for everybody. There's going to be so many nacho cheese sauce parties coming up here. Schools across the state. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg was on Capitol Hill testifying in front of Congress about how the social media giant has been lax in protecting user data. Now, can I play devil's advocate here? Can I? Or is it just more fun for all of us to beat up on a guy who probably went to Men's Warehouse and asked for a hoodie suit? It is? All right, beat him up, Dan. What do I care? Why do I want to get in the way of everyone's fun? I'm sick of playing devil's advocate, right? I just remind everyone that Facebook doesn't cost anything. So... So your data is your fee. What else? Let's see. Equal Pay Day, which is to raise awareness to the continued gender disparity in wages and salary. I have no bid here. I really don't. It should have been done a long time ago. Seems kind of like an easy fix, too. What's the reason against it? Is the corporate hiring people like, well, I mean, why change a good thing? In weather, it's better today. In sports, well, at least the home openers are over. The Cubs opened up at Wrigley to the amazing. Do you know this? I don't know if you know this, Pete. There's no more Yum Yum Donuts. It's long gone. Yeah, I don't know when last time you've been on Clark Street, but there's no more Yum Yum Donuts. Sister Jean was out there throwing out first pitches. The celebrities were all in attendance, and it all had that new concourse smell. But the festivities were spoiled as the Pirates beat the Cubs. Tyler Chatwood pitched the opener but was knocked around. And, of course, no Anthony Rizzo, who's on the quick DL with lower back tightness. But two homers for Javi Baez. Javi with those cool shades. Such cool sunglasses. I can't tell if they're super cool or super 80s. Javi Baez. At least he's got the gold chains, too. Yeah. So, yes. Like I said, Wrigleyville has changed. I don't want to raise any alarm bells, but there's no Yum Yum Donuts. Neither, there's no more McDonald's there. There's no that weird auto mechanic across the street. Taco Bell's gone. But still plenty of hustlers by the L. So there's that. So if you're wondering if that element would go away, no. Nah, you can clean it up all you want. Still can't get rid of the funk. Just out in plain sight now. The White Sox, oh man, not a great homestand. They've gone 0-5 so far. Losing close ones throughout. They asked Renteria if he could teach clutch. And I think he said yes. I guess you can. But the Sox keep coming up short. They're now 3-7. Jose Abreu smacked a 3-run homer in the 9th today. So you got a gamer with him. So that's good. They have one more with the Rays tomorrow than to Minnesota to take on the Twins. The Bulls did what they had to do last night. Lost to the Nets. They currently have the 7th most balls in the upcoming NBA lottery. They could move up or down depending on what happens in the final game tomorrow night at home against the Pistons. And then the playoffs start, and if the Timberwolves make it, we'll just watch them instead. Right? It's all guys that used to be on the Bulls, so that'll be our playoff team. Bears news, the Saints offered a contract to Bears wideout Cam Meredith. Not sure if the Bears are going to match it. They won't get anything in return if they let him walk. If they would have tendered him for, I think it's like $1 million more earlier in the offseason, they'd be looking at a second-round pick in compensation. But then again, the Saints probably wouldn't have been interested. So if it's too rich, let him walk. I'm okay with the Cam Meredith era coming to an end in Chicago. And finally tonight, Riverside police arrested a woman, again, who they say is one of the worst DUI offenders in the whole country. She has 6 DUIs in 6 different states. She's from Minnesota. And that's terrible. That's awful. But once again, proving that in America, you can be the best at anything you put your mind to. Idiot. That's the carryout for April 10, 2018. In honor of Equal Pay Day, we're charging both genders the same amount for our chicken dinner. We believe it's only fair that everyone pays $5.99 and gets a choice of coleslaw or baked beans. The right thing to do. All right, coming up, the download on Chicago business, Unicreamer. We'll talk about disrupting the coffee creamer business. Family affair, 2 sisters. And at 8 o'clock, the Gateway Foundation talks the opioid crisis. And we hear anonymously from someone in recovery. It's the download, 720 WGN. Stay with us.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business.
It's a download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. This is our weekly segment where we talk with CEOs and entrepreneurs. They tell their stories so we can better understand ours. Tonight, a family affair in an effort to improve and disrupt creamers. You know the powdered creamers. It's usually waiting for you at the condiment stations in your work break room. This market's been dominated by big brands for years, but along comes 2 sisters who not only want to challenge the status quo with the product, but also save the planet. Always good when you can do both. Lori and Elise Lefcourt are the co-founders of Unicreamer, a vegan coffee creamer that uses plant-based protein as opposed to the animal protein that's usually the norm. It's a healthy trend and one that, of course, cuts down on animal What can the sisters do to make this product the next big thing? Is it about the environment? Is it about the diet? Is it about the taste? Lori and Elise Lefcourt are my guests tonight on the Download in Chicago Business. Lori, Elise, thanks for being here.
Hey. Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yes,
so,
thanks for having us.
This comes from personal experience, the need for this vegan creamer. Explain that. Because this, I mean, when I say coffee creamers, people automatically have this idea in their head. This is what you put in to lighten up your coffee. But protein is a huge part of the vegan diet. So talk about the personal experience of why you put this product on the market.
Yeah. So I was actually working right out of college. I got this Wall Street job, very high end, was entertaining clients every night. It was so fun. But within, 3 to 4 years in, I noticed a lot of health problems that I never had before. I noticed my skin started to, I was just breaking out. I was gaining weight. Nothing was working. And I was just a miserable person. So I knew I had to make a change, a lifestyle change. And I saw an influencer on Instagram who was advertising this high protein diet. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this a go. Mm-hmm. But at the very same time, I stopped eating animal protein. I went vegetarian because Elise and I are very passionate about animals. So I was like, how am I going to be on the road traveling to all these different countries, going from bank to bank and try to find a way to eat plant protein? And I could not consume 300 calorie shakes before these huge client dinners. So I started pouring my vegan protein mix into my coffee as creamer. And it kept me focused and full throughout the whole entire day. And I'm like, I need to make this an actual thing because I am chunking this coffee up and it is doing so many good things for my body. But at the same time, it was chunky. So I'm like, we need to fix this, change right. it, and then make a product for
that. That was an issue because the actual packaging and the way that you watching your Kickstarter video and the articles about the product, you saw that it was not an ideal product for someone on the go. There are vegan proteins out there. There's plant-based proteins out there for this purpose, but they have yet to sort of figure out how to package it and be in the right space for people on the go.
Right. I think people are looking for a clean label, and we wanted to make sure the product that we're putting out is not going to have a lot of ingredients or a lot of additives. So while there is a lot of plant-based products on the market, like protein bars and shakes, if you look at the ingredients, there's a whole list of additives that people don't even know what they are. So we wanted to make sure we kept our label very small and clean.
When you're talking about demographic and who's going to use it, is it someone who's working out? Is it talk about who is going to be the right consumer for this product?
I mean, we're kind of straddling the line between just vegans and vegetarians using this product, and also people like myself who I'm not, I don't consider myself a full vegetarian, but I do definitely try to cut back on plant-based products. And at the same time with the protein, we do attract this whole market of people who want to maintain their fitness levels, busy salespeople who are constantly on the move and also want to maintain their health. So really we do appeal to a wide demographic.
Yeah. And what's an interesting fact is, there are 22 million Americans who consider themselves vegetarian, right. but it's actually the 113 million non-vegetarians who are buying the plant-based products and making a more conscious decision to buy plant-based products. So we went into it really marketing towards millennial women on the go. But what we found is that there's so many more people, even our parents who are baby boomers, have plant-based meats in their freezer now.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it also, you can just go to your regular grocery store, even Target and Walmart and other places like that, and you'll see that the variety of creamers has exploded on the shelf from what used to just be dairy or, in this case, animal protein powdered stuff to vegan options, almond milk, all the way down the line.
Right. Yeah, and especially with coffee creamers in general, like there's a lot of nut milks out there now. And even some people are starting to notice that the nut milks, especially just in the mainstream grocery stores, have a lot of things in them that you may not want to put into your body. As far as creamers go, there's not that much competition for creamers, quote unquote, and especially ones that are so portable and on the go. So if you look at what is actually in coffee mate, for instance, I mean, there are not any real ingredients in that product. So we want to make sure that when you're putting quote unquote creamer into your coffee, that it's not going to have those creamy
ingredients. When you essentially want to disrupt and make a product or improve a product or specifically zero in on a consumer that might need this product, and you're dealing with, like you just mentioned, product that is in mainstream grocery stores that has been the same for decades and has, you know, unbelievable market share. How do you see yourself going about doing it? I mean, does it be, just have to be a boutique product, or do you see yourselves at some point or another being able to scale and compete against the big coffee creamer companies in this world?
Yeah, well, I think right now where we are, just launching a month ago, people are really relating to our story and for us being a small brand and so transparent. And we're always listening to people. We're always responding to emails and improving our service. And, you know, we're going to be adding to our line, changing things around a little bit. But I do see us scaling on a larger level eventually. I 100%, when we vision this company, I see it being really big. So...
All right, well, let's talk how you're going to get there and what challenges might get in the way. Lori and Elise Lefcourt are in studio. They're my guests tonight at Download in Chicago Business, talking about their product, Unicreamer. We'll continue the conversation here on the Download in Chicago Business. When we come back, stay with us.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
It's Download Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. In studio, Lori and Elise Lefcourt. They are the co-founders of Unicreamer, which is a vegan-based, plant-based protein creamer, coffee creamer and protein for people on the go. And as we've been talking about, really a disruptor trying to enter a market that's dominated by animal-based protein creamers. It's been for decades and decades and decades, the ones that you find in your break room that have folded over and been there for 6 years. You're like, I'll use this for my coffee. Let's talk about the business model and what you guys are attempting to accomplish here, because as you just mentioned right before we went to the break, that you see this being big. What, as you've only launched this a month ago, when you talk about your business approach, because you both, you come from Wall Street, but also at least you come from medical sales. Mm-hmm. So you guys have a background in working in very high volume, high financial, you know, situations, right?
Right.
So how do you apply what you know to working on a new business about a coffee creamer?
I can say from my personal experience working in medical sales and just being in sales since college, I've really just learned the importance of hustling. And I think in terms of starting this new business, that's a lot of what you have to do. And, you know, being scrappy and figuring out ways to do things outside the box. And with my sales experience, I've also got marketing experience as well. So making sure that I have all those, you know, good marketing materials to give to our distributor partners. So that's really... that's really what's helped me along the way.
And it is a lifestyle brand. I mean, you're in the lifestyle. When we talk about vegans, we talk about workout regimen, what you're putting in your body, and talk about marketing, because I would assume even medical sales, you are, you know, you're selling to doctors and to and whatever you do in your past bit or your business, your current business. But the point being that this is as much about pounding the pavement as it is about the brand that you present on the internet.
Yeah, there is so much competition out there for any health product. You can put out the best product in the world, but if you're not putting out the best marketing materials, focusing on branding, focusing on sales in all aspects, you're not going to get anywhere. No one's just going to magically think that your product's better. So having these different backgrounds, Elise, in marketing and sales, and I was in sales as well, but I also helped run a product company before. So I got to see like the behind the scenes. And also just have always had this entrepreneur inside me. So I think we both have the work ethic, and then we each have separate strengths, which has helped us build our business.
When you're working with a product that ultimately is going to be a taste product, you know, it's about taste, you know, do you have to, how much of the business is centered upon research and development of making sure you have the right ingredients and the right actual product? And then how much of it is on the marketing side and the brand to make sure you have the right message?
Yeah, we went through about, I would say, 7 to 8 months of R&D, and we'll always be going through R&D. That's never going to stop. We're always going to be improving. We're always going to be listening to our customers and changing our ingredients before. So we are just focusing on listening to people when it comes to building our brand, but we did do a few months of R&D. When it comes to branding, Elise is the expert on that.
Yeah, real quick on just to follow up on that, Elise. Yeah, R&D is R&D a thing for branding and marketing? Do you have to do the same process that you do when you're talking about the actual product? Do you have to do the same process when you're talking about the branding?
Not necessarily when we're talking about the branding. Oh, actually, yeah, I take that back. I think there's a lot of R&D that goes into it, especially just social media, figuring out what works and what doesn't, you know, trying a few tactics for a few weeks, seeing if people are responding that, you know, are responding to that. Are they responding to contests you're putting up? Are they responding to this types of pictures, this types of content, you know, really figuring out what our market wants from us.
Yeah, there's a lot of A/B testing that goes on when it comes to social media and when it comes to our website and mm-hmm. any marketing materials. We kind of test in sort of that which one is going to work better and then focus on that. So
for being influencers, and both of you are active on Instagram and you want to sell Unicreamer as a lifestyle product, how much risk do you put into it? I mean, are you conservative when it comes to the product and how you're marketing it and saying this is what we decided on and we're doing this? Or do you experiment? Do you try different things and see how it sticks with consumers to see if that might be an area to move into?
I mean, I say we're constantly experimenting with different things. You know, we are still so new that I don't think we're to the point yet to say, okay, this one thing is 100% working for us. So I think that we do definitely need to take a few different avenues to figure out what our customers are responding to best.
It's been an interesting journey because we have to find that one traction channel that works and really capitalize on it, which a lot of it's been this kind of stuff, like mm-hmm. press and shows. So that's been amazing. But yeah, we're still like finding our way with what kind of traction channel is going to work best for us in the long run.
The other part is fundraising, of course, to get this product produced, you kickstarted, but you're also self-funding. At a certain point, when you start trying to get fundraisers involved, you both have experience in sales and trying to get fundraising secured, you have to deal with people who want to come in and say, well, I want a chunk of this business. You know what? I'll put in, but I want 10%. What is your take on that? How do you protect the brand, but at the same time, be open to the opportunities of people coming in and wanting to invest?
Yeah, well, fundraising is a beast. It is one of the hardest things we have ever done. We've always heard this, but it truly is. You know, we put all of our own money into this so far, so we're definitely now having those conversations with people. So we're starting the meetings with the venture capitalists, and we're also starting meetings with people that we know personally who want to help us grow and also want to invest.
Yeah.
So we're starting those conversations. It's been very, very interesting.
What's a non-starter for you guys? Like if somebody comes in and says, I'll give you all the money, just give me the company.
Well, that's a no-go.
That's a no-go. But where, I mean, do you have to think about that kind of thing? We draw the line about the relationship with fundraising?
Yeah, I'd say right now we're trying to find a strategic partner. You know, I think there's been plenty of people that have come in and tried to throw us a certain amount of money for a certain amount of equity. But, we want somebody that's going to help grow our business with us and has those tools to, you know, help us more than just the equity.
All right, my last question real quick. As sisters, as family, what is the advantage to being sisters in business?
It's definitely an advantage because I feel like if it were anyone but her, if we weren't sisters, we would hold grudges. One of us would sue each other for the other half of the company at some point because we'd be holding so many grudges. But when we disagree on something, then we take care of it right away. We'll fight and then we'll be fine.
Yeah, I also think we can just be extremely honest with each other as well about how we're feeling and just get anything out there that, you know, needs to be dealt with. You know, we put it all on the table, we deal with it, and then 2 minutes later, we're good to go.
There you go. Yep. Elise and Lori Lefcourt are the co-founders of Unicreamer. You can find it at unicreamer.com, the vegan coffee creamer that uses plant-based protein as opposed to animal protein for coffee creamer and for protein. Thanks so much for coming in, being my guest, and downloading Chicago Business. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guests are here tonight to put a personal story to one of the biggest crises of our time, opioid addiction. This epidemic is currently claiming 116 American lives per day. And it's becoming harder and harder for us to turn a blind eye as many of these casualties are happening in and around our own families. The White House and local law enforcement are recognizing our country's addiction to painkillers and heroin. But how they plan to lower deaths and eradicate the drug problem still up for debate. The Gateway Foundation knows all of this firsthand. The Substance Abuse Treatment Center offers various services to tackle drug addiction and to help people get sober. Dr. Thomas Britton is with us tonight. He's the president and CEO of Gateway. Thanks for being here, Dr. Britton.
Thank you so much for having us.
Also tonight, we introduce you to Spencer. We're withholding his last name. At an early age, 13 years old, Spencer started using drugs, first marijuana, then cocaine. That all led to heroin. All this happening while living on Chicago's North Shore. The drugs got so bad, the arrests. He was kicked out of high school. For years after, Spencer was in and out of treatment, getting clean, and subsequently falling off the wagon. At age 25, Spencer had a heart attack, and he slipped into a coma. After months of physical therapy, which included learning how to use a fork again, Spencer went right back to using. But that, all that, is the past. After a stint at Gateway, Spencer just celebrated 1 year of being sober. And this story, his story, is one that's indicative of the thousands who are going through these similar situations right now, this very moment in this country. Spencer's here to share his story. Spencer, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with you, Dr. Britton. This is, as I said, 116 American lives per day. Where are we with this? At Gateway, you have the ability to see firsthand what's happening as people are coming into treatment. As more and more politicians and mainstream media get a hold of this story and really shed light on it, is it accurate? Are we in the middle of an epidemic?
Yeah, without any question. You know, opiates as the primary drug of use currently has really changed the scope of addiction in the country. You know, if you look back to the 80s with crack cocaine, you know, if people use crack cocaine, they might get in trouble legally. Methamphetamine, same kind of thing. Prescription pills, same kind of thing. But with opiates, especially the synthetic opiates, people are dying, you know, very, very quickly. In Chicago alone last year, over 1,500 people. That's twice as many people as were killed by gun violence.
When something is happening like this as an epidemic, and you mentioned crack cocaine, but when you talk about something that can kill people quickly, do you have to approach treatment differently? Do you have to change the way that you approach substance abuse in general?
Well, it's a great question. You know, one of the benefits of the field of addiction is as addiction medicine has progressed dramatically. So we have medical intervention that we can do now, Gateway does, every single day, where, you know, medicine alone is not enough to cure you from addiction. But it helps keep you alive, it helps with cravings, and it's a bridge to recovery. Mm-hmm. So we treat people with medical intervention, psychiatric intervention, and addiction medicine. And that wasn't available even 10 years ago.
You know, a lot of what we're going to hear from Spencer tonight, and also many people who go through addiction treatment, we'll talk about the on and off, the ability that this is a very strong drug. And of course, when we talk opiates, we're talking about a whole new classification of addiction or just how much your body relies on that drug. When you talk about sobriety, and we're going to hear the story of going on and off, you guys know that. Are you disappointed when people who go back to using or fall off the wagon, or is it all part of a process?
I think the most simple answer I can give is that every single person's path to recovery from addiction is different. Some people go to treatment one time and they get it, and they never go back to using. Other people use and get into treatment, use and get into treatment over and over again and die. And so the benefit, you know, we have a stronger cure than I think we've ever had, but it is always disappointing when people are not successful. I think the most important thing that we can do and people who are suffering can do is maintain hope that if they come back, they can get it.
There has been much made about local law enforcement and also, you know, national politics as is playing out now, and what the course of action should be from the standpoint of the country, policy, drug policy, and the like. Treatment sometimes gets ignored. Law enforcement will get more money. There'll be more research put into how do you stop maybe the drug makers. We've seen this about drug traffickers and what the penalty should be. But the idea of treatment and mental health facilities and all that area seems to always be deprioritized. Why is that?
First, I'd say that you're right. You know, there's an estimate of 30 to 60 million people who need treatment in this country right now, and only about 3 million people get it. And the people who do receive it are typically not getting as much as they should get. And I think we have been in a cycle of really treating this as a criminal problem rather than a public health problem. And it's easier to address law enforcement. But people in law enforcement know that really this is a public health crisis. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that this needs to be a multi-pronged approach.
Does the industry, when we talk about treatment, do you have to get more, do you have to become more of a lobby? Do treatment facilities and just the overall behavioral science that goes into treatment, do you have to play the political game to make sure that any policy that's going forth when it comes to drugs at the national level is including treatment?
Without any question. And we do that every day. But even things like what we are doing today mm-hmm. is one of the things that if we can change the public opinion, that's typically what leads to policy change. And that's what we really have to focus on.
Dr. Tom Britton is with us. He's the president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, a substance abuse treatment center which offers various services to tackle drug addiction, help people get sober. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and I want to introduce you to Spencer. We're withholding his last name. Spencer can talk about his personal story with drug addiction and recovery. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, we just heard from Dr. Tom Britton. He's the president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, which is a substance abuse treatment center in Illinois. And I want to introduce Spencer. Spencer is someone who has used Gateway and has really had a life since an early age involved with drugs and alcohol and also being sober and falling off the wagon. And we're withholding his last name. But Spencer, thanks for being here. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Right at the top when I read your story. Is it accurate? Do you feel like, God, I'm listening to my life right in front of me?
It is. It's kind of embarrassing, but it is accurate.
All right, let's start it off. Let's talk about this. We hear this a lot because we've heard for years about gateway drugs and, you know, how people get started. But at a young age, at the age of 13, you started using marijuana.
I did.
Tell us about that. Take us back to that moment.
I probably had one friend in school. And I noticed the popular kids were always smoking weed, not going to gym class. And they just looked cool. They looked like the people in the movies. And eventually, I manned up, if you will, and tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And people who use drugs don't discriminate. As long as you have money, they'll be your friend.
Money plays a big part of your story as well. And the reason I say that is a lot of times, and Dr. Britton, you back this up too, the public example or the stereotype when it comes to at least opiates is that it's someone who's down and out, who's poor, might be someone of color who's, you know, we in Chicago have the tent cities that are right along the river. That's not how those people are living under the underpass, under the Kennedy Expressway. That's not me. But in the case of opiates and what we've seen, it's affecting a lot of people that don't live like that.
And if I can add something to that, the primary drug of use in the country right now is still alcohol. You know, it is simply that opiates are so much more obvious because people are dying so quickly. And I think it is really, really critical to understand that, like Spencer said, addiction doesn't discriminate at all. They can look like you, they can look like me, they can look like anybody. But the large percent of people that have it don't look like they do.
All right, back to your story, Spencer. Did it take that experience of seeing the cool kids in the gym class smoking weed? Did you get hooked that it became a big part of your life?
Instantly. 13, I only had like $20 a week, and I thought I was living large at the time. But I would try anything to get more money so I could hang out with more people and be welcomed.
Was it easy to get?
Surprisingly, yeah.
Really? It was just, you knew where to go, you knew how to get it?
Kids have older siblings, and yeah, it's really easy.
So, you know, we talk about 13 years old, and 13, and as a teenager, you know, beginning your high school career, all this was happening, but it first was marijuana, but it quickly moved to other drugs. Talk about when that happened, this idea of going from marijuana to something bigger.
Marijuana got boring, and I started experimenting with alcohol and cocaine, and that was great. I fell in love with it. More people were doing it. Weed was looked down upon, and it was more accessible because parents had it,
mm-hmm. The
alcohol part.
Well, let's talk about the cocaine part, because what was it about that drug that hooked you? What was it about the feeling and everything that was involved in that? Because that is you start to get to a point where now you're talking about a drug that can easily end your life, or a drug that is going to at least be in a situation where you're going to have a lot of ups and downs.
You feel like Superman when you do cocaine. And I was a chubby kid, so I was losing weight. So I was just seeing all the pros. I wasn't looking at the cons, like fights with my parents, not having any money, being reckless. I was just focused on the pros.
When I talk about the cons, what were physiologically that there's this, the downs are down, right? I mean, that's the idea that you constantly want it again because the hangover, if you will, mm-hmm. is so bad.
It's an emotional hangover. You contemplate suicide. You regret doing it in the first place. You regret everything. And the only way to feel better is to do more.
It's also a very expensive drug.
Super expensive.
Where did you get the money?
I started to steal to support my habit. However I could, from whoever. Neighbors, family members, kids, organizations, whatever I could get my hands on. All my morals out the window.
For you to be a 15, 16-year-old kid on the North Shore of Chicago, were you starting to develop a reputation at this point when you start to get into the drugs? Are people recognizing you? Are you a bad kid?
Definitely. I was labeled a cokehead, and I was upset that they called me a cokehead, even though I was doing cocaine, so it fit.
Right.
But it's just the stereotype that you were talking about, like being under a bridge or wearing ratty clothes. I was wearing really nice clothes, surrounded by friends who had Mercedes. Just, it's not the picture that everyone paints.
Mm-hmm. At that time, if you take us back to, because the next step is going to be the one that is going to take you into the world of opiates, but at that time when you start to get labeled and you start to be judged and people, you know, there's also run-ins with the law, tell us, how did that feel? How does it feel for a 15-year-old kid to be labeled in that way?
I embraced it. I was high all the time, so I didn't really care. I had a giant FU attitude towards the world, and I just kept going.
Let's get to the opiates. 17, 16, 17 years old, you say cocaine. Yeah, cocaine is out, and heroin is in.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
It was an accident. This probably sounds like an excuse, but in my mind, I feel like it was. I went to a house to get my coke, and they had heroin instead. Tried it. Fell in love. I got super sick the first time, but I immediately liked it. And
were you trepidatious? Well, everyone knows at this point, you're a savvy kid. You're 17 years old. You know what's going on in the world where heroin addictions are not anything to play with, the life and death situations. Was there any part of you, even with the cocaine habit and obviously being doing drugs since you're 13 years old, that was reticent to say, yeah, let me try this?
Slightly. I just, at that point, I didn't care anymore. I'd been living this lifestyle that I chose. And I just kept going. And from what I saw on TV and film and radio, with heroin, you get sick after a few hours. And so, based on that information, I had to get more. I didn't even let my body get time.
So you had essentially done enough research to know that you wanted to avoid the withdrawals. You wanted to say, I'm just going to do heroin and just skip the down part.
Even though I highly doubt I would have gotten sick.
Is that, Dr. Britton, is that a normal scenario for someone using heroin, that they recognize they're going to get sick and so they're always on the chase for the next thing to avoid that?
I mean, I think the hardest thing about it is, you know, it's really kind of a train that's tremendously hard to get off, because whether you see it or not, you know, you use and then you feel sick, and you know that if you don't use again, you're going to keep feeling sick. And if you picture, like, the worst flu you've ever had, you know, that's what it feels like, muscle aches, nausea, all of that. And you know there's an immediate fix.
Is that how, that's how you looked at it?
It's the flu on steroids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the worst part is, once you actually are physically sick, you know the solution. Mm-hmm. You know how to feel better.
And there's no light at the end of the tunnel except for doing heroin again.
Right.
Another expensive habit, and when you start getting into heroin use, you start drawing a lot of attention. The law enforcement gets involved. You have a long history of arrests. You're thrown out of New Trier.
Yep.
That's obviously, many people fight their lives to get into that school. Was this something that you said, I don't care, and I'm going to keep doing this, or was there ever a point when you were 18 years old that you said, you know, I'm going to do this for another month, and I'm going to find my way out?
I kept putting time limits on when I was going to get clean. And that weekend when I said I would detox and all that on my own, which never works, I would be in the worst pain I've ever felt, and I would go right back to it because I just couldn't handle it.
We're talking with Spencer. We're withholding his last name tonight. Spencer, a longtime drug user since the age of 13, who has been sober for a month, and we thank you. I'm sorry, a year. You're absolutely right. No, no, shortchange. Has been sober for a year with the help of Gateway, the Gateway Foundation, which is a substance abuse treatment center. Dr. Thomas Britton is here as well. You know, and I want to get into that because as we talk about what led you to drugs, we want to talk about how you get off and essentially figure out how that worked for you, Spencer. So we'll take a break real quick to get tonight's news, and then we'll come back and continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, Dr. Thomas Britton. He is the president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, substance abuse treatment center here in the state of Illinois. Tackles drug addiction, helps people get sober. Also, Spencer, we're withholding his last name. Spencer, who has had a life in and out of drug treatment centers, addicted to drugs, and of course, opiates as well. And we're talking about that tonight. Before the news, we talked about, we got to the point where you were addicted to heroin. You, at that point, were sent out, I think it was to California, at some point, and it was your parents, someone got involved and said, enough is enough, treatment center time, you got to get clean. Take us there. When you first are entering a rehab facility and the goal is to get off of heroin, what is that like? What is that experience? And what is your mindset?
Well, luckily I had the resources to go to California for a treatment. A lot of people don't. But I was angry. I was forced to do it. I believe I wasn't ready. I went there surrounded by redwoods, and I was saying how disgusting it was. Where are my buildings? Because I'm from Chicago, even Wilmette. And I was just angry. I was counting down the days of how long I had to be there so I could use again. By then, I was mentally in love with the drug.
So none of it was sticking? Like everything that they were talking to, the counselors, the idea of taking you out of that, the environment, essentially eliminating the drug, all of it was show for you until you get back to it.
Right.
Is that common? Is that something that with a lot of drug users, they're able to play the game and understand that they're there for a second, but they know the minute they get back, they can get back to their lives?
I mean, Spencer's experience is certainly common. You know, the hard part is there's a cultural belief that if you don't choose to go, you know, they're never going to benefit. The research actually says that people that are mandated to go to treatment do better than those who are not mandated. And I think primarily that's because they stay in treatment longer. You know, the biggest indicator of relapse is, you know, short stays. And so we treat 6,000 people a day. We're the largest provider in the country. And so, you know, what providers like Gateway do, they really try to engage the people whether they're resistant or not. You know, they meet them where they are. And, you know, I think the most important question for Spencer is really, what happened that made it finally click? That's what's unique.
What happened?
I can't put words to it. I was just finally done suffering. Thank God, thankfully.
You had a life scare, and a lot of times this is always part of the process when it comes to drug abuse, but when you were 25 years old, you had a heart attack and fell into a coma. It was 50 plus days in a coma for trying to go cold turkey off of meth, right?
That's methadone.
So explain it to me. Explain what went down, what you remember from that situation at the age of 25.
I got onto methadone trying to quit heroin once again by myself without treatment.
So you were essentially trying to get off of heroin.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that's a daily medicine that you take, and I was on a high dose, and one day I didn't take it. I thought I could do it, and I had a heart attack, and I just remember waking up in a room, people calling me noodle legs, and having to learn my parents' names again. That was terrible.
So it was 2 months or so of being in a coma, and you woke up like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
For you, that experience, the experience of obviously you have proven, even in the story that you're telling, is a lifetime of trying to get off of the drug and a lifetime of succumbing to go back on the drug. It's this sort of yo-yo experience. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate for all the stuff we skipped from the age of 18 to 25 and where you're at now? But this idea that you have spent a life of wanting to get rid of the drug but succumbing to the drug.
I want it so much that I'll fight so hard to get high and get my drug or get my alcohol. And then I'll get, like, too deep into it, instantly regret everything. And it's like trying to swim against the current. Like, you're already down there. You're screwed. You need a lifeguard to come save you. You can't do it by yourself.
Why did you think you could? After taking, being in rehab, in and out of rehab, knowing that many people probably have said to you along the way, you can't do this by yourself, but there you are at the age of 25 trying to do it by yourself.
I don't think I believed I could. I was more embarrassed to ask for help, tell people I had a problem. So I would try and do it on my own, and I would always fail.
You've mentioned it a couple times about embarrassment, right? And mm-hmm. the emotion that goes into this. How much do those emotions, embarrassment or fear, or anxiety, people finding out, how much of that, and looking in hindsight, how much of that fed into the fact that you went back and used again? How much does embarrassment and fear and those emotions play into the story of your life?
So much. And I'm just trying to ignore all those feelings by using it and masking it with drugs and alcohol. Because mm-hmm. you don't think of that when you're high or drunk. You think you're a model student again, or a model citizen.
You know, for you, having to relearn your parents' name, and as I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, you know, you had to learn how to use a fork, utensils.
The bathroom.
During that process, and it's a lot for listeners right now who are listening to this who may say, I can't even imagine that. Are you introspective? Are you retrospective? Are you thinking, oh, man, I can't believe the choices I made to get here, and once I'm able to pick up this fork and figure this out, I'm done. I'm going to go to rehab. Are those thoughts in your head, or are those something for a different time, different day?
A different time, different day. I was thinking about my next drink when I was in the hospital bed, as soon as I could think clearly, because I felt like I deserved it after being put in there. Because mm-hmm. it wasn't my fault. It was everyone else's in my mind.
It was. So, again, I guess we go back to the same question, right? When did the light bulb go off? I know it's hard for you to find that moment, but it sounds like as we tell your story that we're getting a cumulative effect. To understand that there are a lot of things that led up to this moment where the light bulb would go off. Do you see it that way? Do you see that there's a lifetime to make the light bulb click? Or was there something specific that said, you know what, I'm done with this cycle?
Like I said before, I can't pinpoint what it was that finally clicked. After I had the coma and the hospital stay, I continued daily drinking and using, and I was probably in and out of hospitals for seizures from detoxing 4 or 5 times.
So I get this right, after all that happened in the coma and learning how to say your parents' names again and use a fork, you went back to using?
Of course.
So let's talk about Gateway. You know, you are celebrating 1 year sober. Congratulations.
And Thank you.
And I would imagine that means the world to you, in the sense that you have tried throughout this story and the story you're telling us tonight at different occasions to get this done. You've now had the opportunity to do that. Why do you think it's sticking? What is it about this time around, what you've been doing in the last year, that's different than the times before?
I'm putting in work. I've been sober before. I didn't try to keep it. I've had years before, and one relapse can take you right back to the beginning, and you lose everything. I constantly work on myself and stay connected on a daily basis.
That is a powerful statement, this idea that there have been years before. And it's a tremendous accomplishment to have been sober for a year. But you're very well aware that could easily go up in smoke with one decision. How do you keep that decision at bay?
I just have to be aware that it can happen. Drugs and alcohol are out there. And I think a healthy bit of fear knowing what's out there is good for someone, good for me.
Dr. Britton, I asked that question to you as well. I mean, when you're dealing with people who are in recovery and they now at having accomplishments like Spencer is at a year's time, you have to balance the celebration part of it with the fact that there's still work to be done, because 1 year as in Spencer's time is a tremendous accomplishment, but you also, as he just said, I mean, that could, like that, it could be over. So how do you at Gateway balance the pride and the diligence?
I think we should celebrate every moment for what it's worth. I think that the celebration and the recognition of the significance are separate. And so what we know is that people who stay actively engaged for treatment for a year, for example, have 85% or so recovery rates. Those who are 90 days or less have about 30% recovery rates. And so there's something magic about maintaining the relationship on an ongoing period, and I think that's why Spencer's clean today. But I think that the other thing is that there are those people who cross the line in which they can't go back to being a normal person, that they are going to have the disease of addiction for the rest of their life. And just like if I have heart disease or diabetes or something like that, I do maintenance. It doesn't mean my life's not fun. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I don't have jobs and wives and children. But it means I need to do something to maintain my recovery, or else it will come back.
When you hear that, does that make sense to you, Spencer? Is that the concept that this disease is with you? This is something that is going to be with you, and it defines you
for the rest of my life.
For the rest of your life. How do you approach that?
Like any other disease, you have to treat the disease. Like what Tom was saying, you get cancer or you get strep or cold, you're going to do everything in your power to get better. What makes addiction different?
Mm-hmm. Well, here we are defining your life through these terms. You're on the radio with me right now. We're talking about decades of your story, and those stories really going to the worst parts of your life, right? Mm-hmm. What does addiction do to you to define you? You know, you'll go through all those experiences, and you've been tremendous in the sense that you've got a 1 year clean and sober. But what does it take out of you? Who are you as opposed to when you were 13? To talk about what addiction does to you when you're clean and sober.
I wouldn't say it defines me. I say it definitely has taken a lot out of me. But it's like a soldier that has gone to war. You have the stories, but you just got to keep going forward. Now, I love volleyball. I say that defines me. I love my sister, my parents. I love life.
There might be some people listening tonight that, not unlike what we talked about a little bit earlier, see this as a criminal thing, not a recovery thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They may be texting in right now or calling in saying, you made your bed. You made your choice. You know, how do you look at your life in the way that you have struggled with addiction, struggled with heroin, struggled with opiates, and you're still here?
Well, you got to get off the stereotyping of what addiction looks like. I know surgeons, pilots, lawyers, doctors, TV hosts, everyone in this world I feel is connected to someone who is working on addiction. If you look around, it's a silent killer. Like, you never know who's struggling with it. They could be serving you your coffee right now, redoing your bathroom. We're all around.
Spencer, I can't thank you enough for coming in and telling your story. I know it's hard, man. And, you know, I guess I asked the question at the end, like, having this experience to talk on the radio for this hour, is it cathartic? Is it feel good? Does it feel bad? Like, what is the emotion that's attached to telling your story?
Well, I've already lived it, so I know it. It's crazy. I never thought I'd be in a radio station or a radio studio, and I'm just happy to be here.
Dr. Britton, and I thank you as well for coming in and sharing the microphone with Spencer. You know, as this becomes more and more of a mainstream story, and it seems that it is, meaning every day there's new stories and eye-opening statistics that come out about opiates and opioid addiction, what do we need to know? Is this going to be the defining crisis of our time?
I think the most important thing, you know, the beauty of your job is that you have power to change lives, literally. And there are people listening right now that either personally are suffering from this or have somebody they love who's suffering from this or who's suffering from it and they don't know that they're suffering from it. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing that they can walk away with is that there's a solution and that no matter how scared they are, no matter how little hope that they have, they don't need hope to recover. They don't need to be scared anymore that there's a solution. You know, companies like Gateway are here to help. You know, Spencer's an example of that. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in the Spencers of the world.
Dr. Thomas Britton is the president and CEO of the Gateway Foundation, which is a substance abuse and treatment center here in the state. And Spencer, who is clean and sober for a year. Mm-hmm. And we hope that continues. Congratulations. And we celebrate that year. And I can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing your story. And Dr. Britton, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
A lot of great texts. We get a lot of response on the show, and I appreciate everybody who texts in tonight, especially with the sensitivity of Spencer's story and what we heard about his battle with addiction and recovery. A tremendous amount of positive, uplifting messages to Spencer. We'll do our best to try and forward those along, but also people sharing their stories, being in recovery or going through addiction and their thoughts on the subject, and I appreciate everybody texting in and sharing their stories. 312-981-7200. It is, I you know, Spencer did a great job of explaining, unfortunately, his circumstance and his story. And I think it resonates with a lot of people because it's relatable. I think a lot of people out there listening right now are going through this. And I can just tell you right now from eyeballing anecdotal information about how people respond to segments. It's pretty intense. And I think that the core of the interview was about challenging perception, stereotypes, what we think we know about this specific crisis. A lot of people at one point or another in their lives sort of assumed it really didn't have anything to do with them, that it might be difficult circumstances for someone who lives on the streets or maybe in a different class, maybe poor, homeless. But that's just not the case. You're Spencer, growing up on the North Shore, given every opportunity like so many other people who grew up in that area and succumbing to a life of addiction. And we didn't even get into stories, and we will in this program, that are as harrowing when it comes to injury. This is another one where someone will get hurt. I've got a number of those stories that are popping up. Hurt their back. Knee injury. They were prescribed opiates. An opioid to deal with the pain. And were never able to get off of it. And that turns into something else and trying to get drugs illegally. It's a vicious cycle. And the Gateway Foundation, thanks to them for setting that up, and thanks to Spencer for sharing his story. He said, I think we should do more of that. I think that that's it's a public service announcement in a way to let people at WGN Radio know that others are out there as well. And that, you know, frankly, you get a better understanding of hearing it from the person as opposed to reciting statistics. Or far too often we hear people tell us what should be done about addiction and recovery. And rarely do we get to hear from the people who are actually going through it. So great conversation. Thanks to Spencer and Dr. Britton for coming in. All right, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, shift gears, Horatio Sanz, former SNL cast member, and Joe Nunez, they're going to be here. I'm excited to have these guys. They've been on the program a couple of times. Longtime friends who both live in L.A. now and have successful, you know, successful careers in comedy and television, film. They always find a way to get back for the big Cubs games. They really do. And I ran into Joe Nunez today. Like, I ran into him down at Wrigley Field. It's like, hey, what are you doing in town? And Horatio is doing a conversation with Richard Roper at the Museum of Broadcast Communications coming up on Thursday. So we'll talk about that. All that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And then we'll play The Worst at 10, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know what? It has to be something big with the Cubs to have these two clowns in Chicago.
The clown princes.
The
clown prince of Chicago over here, Joe Nunez.
Hello.
Joe Nunez. That's me.
Horatio Sanz in studio. They are back on the download. The last time we saw you guys, I think it was playoff time.
We like to keep it on the download.
That's right. Horatio Sanz in town for the Museum of Broadcast Communications Conversations in Comedy. You got a big conversation with Richard Roper at the museum coming up on Thursday night. I think it starts at 6 with an SNL.
Yeah, they got me for a few hours, so it should be pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's good. So, I mean, are you excited to do this kind of thing? To, like,
absolutely. I could tell SNL stories till the cows come home. So, I mean, if they're having me come here and hang out, it was like another thing that we can hang out and do. I like the Museum of Broadcasting. I used to go watch tapes of old shows at the library. So it's good that they've got a building, and I'm glad that we were doing this thing.
I can only assume that you engineered it so you could have this happen the week the Cubs were doing their home opener.
Nope.
It just worked out that way?
Just lucky that way. Worked out.
Joe Nunez as well. Stage and screen, movies like 40-Year-Old Virgin, Superbad. Good to see you, man.
Thank you, man. We saw
each other today, and I was like, I can't believe you're in town.
We saw each other at the game.
I know, right?
Nunez is famous from Superbad. He is the F My Life guy.
Yeah.
If you say F My Life, it's because of Joe Nunez.
And I'm going to be the voice of the new Capital One commercial spots.
Really? What's in your wallet type stuff?
What's in your wallet?
They're keeping that?
Yeah. I'm going to be the guy that plays Nacho, the guy inventor of nachos.
This is true.
The spot I shot, and Capital One's going to sue me for this. But they're like, let's do a story about these women that walk into a restaurant and the guy's by himself and they want something to eat. And he just whips up some tortilla chips and cheese, and they're like, what's this called? Guy covers up his badge, his name tag that's Nacho. I'm like, oh, they're called Nachos.
That's it. Do you get to say what's in your wallet?
And then, what's in your wallet?
All right. Oh, you do say it?
I do say it.
Oh.
I'm waiting for it to air.
All right. Maybe a big sporting event, like a NASCAR.
Like the NCAA like Final Four?
Yeah, a Final Four would work.
Great.
Maybe a 2019-er.
Go Cubs. Work out.
Do you prepare? I mean, do they tell you what you're going to be talking about when you do this kind of thing, or is it just kind of wing it with Richard?
You kind of just wing it. I'm pretty good with talking about it because, on my podcast, The Horatio, always tell, every once in a while I tell SNL stories. So I'm hoping that he brings stuff up that I haven't thought about for a while. You know, like he brings up sketches that I don't even remember, and I could go, that opens up this thing in my mind where I remember we did that. And Nunez is also going to donate a piece of memorabilia
from my estate,
from his estate, the Joe Nunez estate.
Mm-hmm.
When I did Elton John going to Donatella Versace's Super Bowl party,
right?
I wore this early. Should we tell everybody?
Let's wait.
Oh,
wait. There's an artifact from the show. It's Chicago. It's Chicago centric.
Yeah.
And we're going to reveal it after the talk.
All right.
The SNL talk.
So you got to go to the talk, which is Conversations in Comedy.
Yeah, people should come to the talk.
At the NBC, at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on Thursday.
Nunez is giving everybody lower back massages.
And I'm selling T-shirts.
So that's good, too. You get like a two-for-one kind of situation. And then you get to hear my stories about SNL.
Right. And hopefully you'll recreate
Cork Soaker T-shirts.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I will do a couple impressions too.
Yeah,
I will. Right. I'll do a couple impressions.
Oh, your famous impressions, right?
Yeah,
my favorite one.
My favorite is bad Harry Carey. I prefer other means the preferred.
That's Harry Carey. Thank had you. A stroke, Harry Carey.
Well, Harry Carey did have a stroke. Don't make fun of it.
I was just reading this White Sox book, and they have Harry Carey used to do it in the broadcast in the bleachers with Bill Veeck back in the early 80s and or late 70s. And he, man, he's got short shorts on and no shirt.
Polyester.
Burning. I dare to say it's sexy, but
he's burning. Yeah, his hair is blonde because of the sun. He's beautiful.
You wish that MLB would bring that back. Like bring back the announcers that would go shirtless in the bleachers.
Sit out in the bleachers.
I almost want to lose a leg so that I could start hanging out in center field like Bill Veeck used to. Right. Is that cool?
I've been noticing you guys don't see that as much because, you know, being in L.A., you got the Dodgers, but also in Chicago with the Cubs, the fans are always there. But you're seeing – I'm watching SportsCenter, and there's because it's April and you'll have a game in Tampa or even here in Chicago when it's snowing or other places where there'll be a foul ball and the camera whips and there's just nobody there. I mean, do you guys think about that? Like, you know, how lucky you are to be fans of the Cubs and also live in Los Angeles? Because there are a lot of baseball markets that aren't doing well right now.
Yeah, but you know, we suffered a long time. So
Too long. We're suffering right now.
And you know, you guys won in 2005. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty good. We hadn't won since 1908. Yeah. I'm very happy that we're kind of in this, you know, this big thing of we're really good, actually. And we're enjoying it.
And sports, we're not the redheaded stepchild of, you know, professional sports, this city. We're all champions.
Right.
Cubs, Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks.
Yeah, right.
What we got left?
Der Sting.
Well, Sting don't exist anymore. I'm waiting for
that championship. My brothers got beat up by the Chicago police.
What?
Yeah, it was horrifying. my brothers ran on the field when the Sting won the championship. And
Karl-Heinz Grenitz.
Police just started beating the hell out of everybody.
As one does. Hey, okay, you know what? You don't run on the
you
field.
You don't run on the field. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
You met a hooligan the other night. You guys went nuts on hockey. Or not hockey.
Soccer.
Soccer.
Sorry.
Doc.
Yeah, Doc. We were at Ricochet's. We had a couple margaritas and a burrito at Garcia's. Just plugging a local business because we're all about.
I just went to Garcia's for the first. I grew up, or I had an apartment in Lincoln Square in '95, and I went. Used to be Garcia's was like that's where you just would be all every $3.
So good,
kind of
it's the best.
And we just went back up there to this summer. And sat down with the friend's family. My old roommate was from New York. It was great, man.
You decided to slum it?
We slummed it. We went back to
Where
Garcia's.
Where are you living now?
I live in West Loop. No, West Loop. Come on, man.
Oh.
Naperville.
I don't know.
Hey, Naperville's number one city in the world, isn't
it?
Yeah. Best place to live.
Yeah. Naperville is actually a little rough these days.
Yes. Everyone I don't want to disparage to the West Loop. Naperville, but I'm just saying that. Come on. We know each other.
Yeah. Chicago guy. You're Chicago.
Yeah. Horatio say it. We Joe Nunez in studio. Horatio's going to be Conversations in Comedy, talking about the SNL experience as part of the exhibit that they have at the museum.
Oh, gosh. Have you seen that exhibit?
It's great. It's awesome.
It's like a week in the life of, you know, producing a show.
Let's do this. I'll take a break, come back, and have you seen the exhibit?
Yes, I saw it.
All right, I'll ask you if it's accurate.
And can we take some calls? Right. Can we take some calls?
Yeah, if you want to call it, 312-981-7200. Joe Nunez, Horatio Sanz are ready to take calls. And sit down. Let's stay with us. Joe Nunez, Horatio Sanz in studio tonight on a download.
I can't believe the news guy is not in the same room here with you.
Yeah, he's up on the sixth floor.
Sixth floor?
Mm-hmm. We're moving out of this space in like a month.
Why? Where are you guys going?
We're going across the river to one of the buildings up here on Wacker.
I miss you guys.
Beaumont's?
We miss you too, man. We're all together here, man.
Yeah.
Man, so, we love this spot.
But I think we'll be together. That's a good thing that Rob will
be really?
Closer together, yeah.
Oh, you will?
Is Rokon going there?
He's going there, yeah.
Is there
going
to be a window so people could see?
No, I don't think so.
It's on the sixth floor, bro.
You guys should have an elevator that goes up there so you can see people.
just a platform for people to stand?
Like on the Hancock Center, you could have that
tilt.
Plexiglass where you can look down.
Yeah,
so I don't understand whether
there
would
be like
a bar
if you're committing suicide
or outside for people
to watch.
You
think that you could get some hustlers out here?
Yeah, at least hot dogs or something, you know. Or those hot dogs with bacon wrapped around it, like they sell in L.A.
All the construction is done now, essentially, in Wrigleyville. This was, you guys were there today for the home opener.
My God,
what do you guys
amazing.
Think of Wrigley? Because you guys both spent a lot of time there with I.O. and other places and you know, in the 90s and 2000s. What do you guys think of the way that Wrigleyville has changed?
I mean, it's not bad. it's impressive. It's kind of like, it's hard to kind of take in. But that's kind of,
it's not
a lot of Chicago
yet.
Is just different. Yeah.
That hotel is massive. It, you know, you feel bad because like, oh, this bar isn't there. This restaurant isn't there anymore. Oh, Yum Yum Donuts. That's a long time ago, though.
Yeah, right.
Oh, McDonald's. Oh, Taco Bell is going away.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but Yum Yum Donuts,
I love
man.
That
that's
we're
a real
all,
tragedy.
Yeah, that's a real tragedy. I love her nostalgic for the Taco Bell.
I
that's
my a lot of powdered sugar in Yum Yum Donuts.
But that McDonald's, too. I mean, it was, you know, all those homeless people, they were hanging out there. Where are they going to go? You know,
well, that's I mean, a little that's sad. Where I got a lot of meals. Like, yeah. I couldn't afford to buy hot dogs and beers and brats.
But the McDonald's is in there. You know, it is in there.
Is it really?
Yeah. There's a McDonald's inside that huge hotel.
At the bottom level of Hotel Zachary, which I'd like to plug Hotel Zachary for a hurry show myself. We would like to attend the soft opening and maybe get some free rooms. You know, just to check it out.
The soft
opening. We'll like live tweet from our rooms.
You're influencers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're social.
You know what? A soft opening is always better, right?
If you're listening, Tom Ricketts and Hotel Zachary, we would love to come and spend the night in the hotel for a week and just check it out and Yelp it. So
yeah.
Whatever you need.
You'll Facebook live it.
Has changed.
It's another world. It's Tron.
Yeah. It's interesting. You're right. I mean, it's
like with the Patriots, you know, if you win a little bit and.
Yeah.
They really, really did go all in here.
We only won once, and all of a sudden.
We only have to win once for 200 years.
Building this entire.
If we don't win for another 108 years, it'll be okay.
That's
after
funny.
The 109th, I'd be like, oh, come on. Because you know our brains will be suspended in some kind
of
fluid.
I'm already annoying all the listeners and friends because all I'm doing is saying, oh man, the McDonald's is gone. Oh, no, the Yum Yum Donuts is gone. Like,
man,
it's like,
as long
right.
as they don't take out Wrigley'sville, dog. Down the street,
that'll be gone. They're across from Metro.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, it won't be gone.
That area survived a little bit, but that would be next. I don't know.
Well, you know, that's What's progress. That? That's What's progress, that? Joe. That's economics. You do but well.
It's
you
becoming
know.
A destination. I mean, you could do stuff there year round.
But the field is still the field, you know, and that's all that really matters is that field stays that way it is. And
as long as that
walking
Ivy's still there. Long as you know. The bones of the field.
All right, I'll ask you a sentimental question. I've asked you guys this before, just because when we did the World Series
wasn't
coverage
finished
everything,
when I thought, but okay.
Okay, sorry. Emotionally, like when you guys sit down in that stadium in Wrigley Field, what does it do for you guys being Chicagoans? Why do you guys make the trek back for home opener, for playoff, for whatever it is? What is it about Wrigley Field that brings you back?
Well, I think for me... there's a lot of great family memories. I would go there as a kid, and
I'm just waving to the fans outside.
And you know, really, they were on free TV when we were little, and we got to see every single game. And for me, for Joe, I think he could take one bus to get to Wrigley Field, and I could take two with a transfer, Pulaski to Addison. So it was just it's a beautiful place. And I did see Bill Veeck a bunch, and that was cool. And yeah, you can go to the ballpark as a little kid, and I don't know if you can do that anymore, really, but, you know, back then it was okay.
Family. That's what Wrigley Field, I had an uncle that used to take me. I used to go by myself when I was old enough to ride my bike.
Sad.
Yeah, it is. I was an usher.
I had friends, but...
You were an usher?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they fired me because I was always late.
Joel told me he was turned down from Jewel Osco.
I applied three times to be the bagger at my local Jewel Osco. That has nothing to do with Wrigley Field or our memories, but it is
off Addison.
It scarred me. That's why I hate groceries.
No, he loves groceries.
I worked at the Dominic's. So it was
the Dominic?
The Dominic.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, now it's right? Mariano's.
Now it's Mariano's, yeah.
It's a great supermarket.
If you take a test, I went in there and I started as a bagger, but if you take the I can count dimes and nickels test, you can become a cashier, and it's like $2 more an hour.
Oh.
Yeah, no one noticed that.
Were you good at math?
No, but I knew how to count nickels
enough.
And dimes. Come on, man.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Nickels from 85 cents.
That's a cash register.
Tell me 85 cents.
I was a little chubby Mexican kid, and I think they were like, he's gonna
eat all the food.
He's gonna eat our profits.
Well, Mama, you could have just said you're chubby. You didn't have to say chubby tortillas. Mexican.
I stole all the Milagro tortillas.
Now, if you walked into Jimenez looking for a job,
I would have no legs. You. I'd be in my parents' no basement, 600 pounds. I'd be on my 600-pound life right now.
If you had gotten a job at Jimenez?
Yeah. Jimenez is a Mexican grocery.
Yeah, I know.
Up by where Horatio used to live. Mmm, carnitas.
It smells like paprika so bad your nose hurts.
Menudo on the weekend. Mmm. Shut up, man. All right, here's the...
they actually slaughter animals in the grocery store.
That's really funny to him. He's Chilean. Okay, so here's the question. For any callers want to call in and guess Horatio Sands' favorite burrito joint in the city of Chicago?
Oh, there you go.
Gets
312-981-7200. Maybe we can get him a burrito. That burrito.
A signed burrito.
A signed burrito.
Burrito joint.
Yeah, what do? I can leave you $20 to give somebody, put it in an envelope. Because I don't think we can get gift certificates to the burrito place.
Let's not go 20. I don't want to be sending cash back, you know, like find you in L.A. and be like, you know, the burrito was only $9. Here's $11 back. See how good I was with the math there?
You're very good. I don't know how I doubted that you'd make a good grocery guy.
Yeah. All right, we have our first caller from Antioch.
No, there's nobody on the line from Antioch. Oh, okay. But that would have worked. Yeah.
Hello, we're on the air, right?
Yeah, we're on
the air. Okay, great.
Horatio, you are also in the show Great News, which is a fantastic show that is on NBC.
Yes.
For you to make the transition from doing Saturday Night Live, which is, of course, a live program that's once a week, and they do 15, 17 of them a year, to working in a schedule that's more sitcom-oriented, how is that for you?
You know, honestly, it's a lot less work. When I was on SNL, you kind of have to write and direct and produce. You know, you're meeting with set designers and costumers. And so it's a lot of work if you get a sketch on. And with this Great News, it's written by Tina Fey and these amazing writers. So I don't have to write anything. I show up and the scripts are great. My lines are great. So the difference is it's a lot easier and it's very comfortable to, and the people I work with is, they're just great.
A lot of great Chicago people on that show. And as you mentioned, Tina Fey, and you've worked with Tina Fey at Saturday Night Live, probably at Second City as well in Chicago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, does that help with the comfort level of doing comedy on network television when you have people that you worked with before?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, Tina Fey, you really can't doubt, you know, her stock in television, you know? So, right. You know, if I did think, hey, this isn't going the way I want to, you know, I could talk to her about it, but it has been like not only her, but Tracy Wigfield, who is someone who kind of worked underneath her at 30 Rock. She's amazing. So it's just this little Tina, you know. So we have like a really great writing staff and, you know.
Yeah, I love it. I love the show. My son loves the show, too.
And I know. I heard.
Yeah, it's wafting through the air.
He's checking out. He's going down there and watching them before you can watch them, right?
That's right. That's right. So I appreciate the family sensibility of Great News. Horatio Sands, Joe Nunez in studio tonight. Horatio is going to be in Comedy Conversation with Richard Roper at the Museum of Broadcast Communication coming up on Thursday night. We'll take a quick break, come back, continue the conversation here on The Download. So stay with us. Joe Nunez, Horatio Sands in studio tonight. We're playing The Worst coming up at 10 o'clock. Scott Goldstein and Mars Timms will be here. 312-981-7200. This is the segment where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes.
Prize? What's tonight's prize?
Pizza. Lou Malnati's.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Buddy. Can I have some of those?
Well, no, I mean, you gotta play
gotta
the game.
In the contest. Yeah,
come on. I'm in town only once a year. Just give me a ticket?
It's a
certificate?
It's a gift certificate. But I don't have them. I'm like handing them out. I'm faxing them.
Just give me one. I know you got a stack of them somewhere in the back there.
Hold on. It's in the oven right now. It's piping hot.
What?
Yeah.
My sister texted me. My dad wants to call in.
Oh, we should talk to him.
Yes.
Love to
Please
have
call.
Mr. Nunez.
My father, Gregory. Hey, Scott Goldstein is in the office.
Scott Goldstein coming up in the
studio.
The worst. He just walked in. Another guy who was at the Cubs game today.
I think he came to answer the question, answer the trivia. Pasadena? Horatio Sands' favorite burrito joint in the city of Chicago is not La Pasadita, but I do love La Pasadita.
Is it one of the taco burrito palaces?
No.
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 All right.
This has a lot to do with geography.
Okay. You grew up Pulaski, like you're Pulaski and Peterson?
No, farther south.
Okay.
A lot farther south.
Let's see. Is this a place that would have been in the vicinity of your home?
Yes.
Is this place a man?
No.
All right. Is it between Western and Pulaski?
No.
Oh, man.
It's between Pulaski.
Oh.
And something else.
Further west?
Yes.
This is out of my jurisdiction.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Pulaski. I could go to Cicero Avenue. Cicero? Is it past Cicero?
Your type didn't come up.
It's not past Cicero, no.
Except for...
Cicero's too far west.
Drugs.
But if someone calls in, I will buy them a pizza.
From the Yaxies. Burrito? From the burrito place?
Just Yaxies.
From the burrito place.
Just the cheese.
Good to see you, man.
And good to see you.
I will take somebody to...
Dump it all.
Wantitons.
Wantitons.
What a contest. I gave the answer away.
Yeah, you did. 312-981-7200. Now you don't have to call that number. Because,
oh, good.
We'll take the next caller.
For both you guys, living in L.A., do you like it? You still living in L.A.?
I love it a lot. I love that, you know, it's very sunny, and then we could, you know, our friend. It's just fun. It just looks like the... Like California in the 70s when you watch Kojak, you know?
Exactly, dude.
But he was in New York. Exactly. Like, you know.
Hawaii 5-0, right?
Hawaii 5-0. Yeah, it looks just like, or that's
Hawaii
LA.
Hawaii
5-0
was Hawaii.
Yeah, I'm sure it was LA.
You know, like
we're
the Caribbean
streets of San Francisco.
Yeah. Streets of San Francisco, right?
Yeah, it was shot all in Echo Park.
Chips. You know, when I grew up watching Chips, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get out to LA.
Joe, for you, talk about your career. You know, like, let's talk about what you want to do. Because you got the Capital One commercial coming
up. How much time we got?
How much time? I mean, are you the kind of actor and comedian that you're constantly going out on auditions? Are you waiting for your agent to come to you and say, yo, I got something for you? How does it work to get work?
Oh, I'm always going out for stuff. I'm lucky enough to have been, or I guess worked enough, where people do call and ask me to do bits on a TV show or a movie. I'm doing more voiceover now. I'm on this Disney show called Elena of Avalor on the Disney Channel. And then it rebroadcasts on the Disney Junior. And I do a voice called Armando, which is ironically my middle name. So when I got cast for it,
I
told them that. Yeah. And the kid, the character stuff. Looks like me, Disney. Hey, look, there's more of our fans on the window.
Oh, yeah.
I've done mostly film. I've been lucky. You know, a lot of TV. My dream is to come back to Chicago.
Yeah.
To do one of the Dick Wolf shows. If you're listening, Dick, I want to be on Chicago Fire, Chicago Hope, Chicago Med, Chicago
hit the
PD,
trifecta.
Chicago Sewage, Chicago whatever show.
Streets and Sand.
I was on Prison Break back in the day, and they flew me out here for like 5-6 months. And it was amazing. I mean, I had to leave Chicago to work in Chicago. That's the irony. That's the wonderful irony.
The wonderful irony.
But it was.
But it's amazing how much production's being done here. It to the point where, because this building, the Trib Tower, is kind of empty... They shot Empire in here for the last month or so. So they've just been used. They've just been cords and
I'll do Empire.
You know, everything and huge rigs blocking the parking and all this kind of stuff because they're using this as one of the offices for Empire. So
it's a classic, beautiful old building that sadly is going away.
Yeah. Well, it's not going away.
It's not going away.
Yeah.
What, they're not going to demolish it?
No.
You can't take this down.
I thought they were going to demolish it.
No, they're going to convert it.
I thought they were putting up a
skyscraper, yeah, behind it.
Oh.
Like, there's a parking lot right behind the Trib Tower that's about as big as this room.
They're getting rid of the parking lot?
And they're creating one of these towers.
No. What is this
That is going to be the second largest building tallest building in Chicago. And it's, seriously, the base is about the size of this room.
This is just to knock Trump off the list a little bit.
I think it might be. I think.
Just we're going to build a parking lot sized high rise.
Just to
knock him down just a little bit.
Just a little bit. That's how we do it in Chicago, right?
Well, if they destroy it in a this building, this iconic Tribune building, Tribune Tower, is it in a movie? Like if they blow it up,
right?
Let's celebrate it.
Yeah, right.
And the next Transformers movie.
Well, yeah, Transformers. Just
how much are you guys, I mean, how often do you guys run into people you did improv with in Chicago? Like, working in L.A.?
I try to avoid them, you know what I mean? a lot of people are having hard times down there. Theaters are closing. So we just try to stay on our own side of town, you know?
As soon as I.O. closed, we moved a little bit
further
east.
Yeah, that's right, it did, right? Were you guys doing work at I.O. in L.A.?
We would occasionally do stuff there. We'd go, we'd drink there more than
drink at the
than
bar.
Perform.
John Crowley, God rest your soul. He's not dead, but
the I.O. West,
his
which,
job there.
Yeah, man. I.O. West closed just recently. It's a big thing.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Which was sad because it was a place for us to, like, hey, let's go to I.O. And on any given night, you'd see, you know, a familiar face from...
If you're coming in from out of town, if you were from Chicago, that was a place you would go and you'd dodge, like, drug addicts on the street to get there and Scientologists, but it was a place you knew you could go see people you knew in L.A. Right.
The worst is drug addicted Scientologists.
That combo.
That are also improvisers.
Right.
That's that three sucks. Cults at once.
Because they're taking, they're taking space. They're on the roster. They're taking space.
So now Scientology's taking over I.O. West.
And so is it UCB? Is that the only game in town in L.A. now?
No, there's a few other places now.
Groundlings.
Oh yeah, right.
That's but Miles opened up the pack, and then Rebecca's the playground.
No, that's not the playground.
What is it called?
The club.
The clubhouse. Rebecca.
Where you practice?
But we should give it a shout out. The clubhouse in Los Angeles.
It's great.
Those are our friends.
Thank you, Lindsay. Frank visiting from L.A.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Lindsay Frank.
It is interesting because Horatio, I remember seeing you do improv, do ASCAT at UCB in New York, in that old space that was the original space that you had with the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Yeah, underneath the grocery store.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, the memories of that place. Do you stay in contact with all of the people that you came up with? I think about all the successful people that are now, when you talk about Amy Poehler and Matt Walsh and all right. all the crew that were on those stages in those dingy Chelsea theaters of the late 90s. So do you stay in touch with all that crew?
Absolutely. And even better, they stay in touch with me and give me work. Now that they're all becoming famous, they're all very kind to me. And I guess it's good that I was kind to them, but it's pretty great. We do get actually that's a very nice perk is that we get a lot of friends that put us in shows because they know us and they know we're good guys.
Can I just say this? Horatio Sanz is an original member of the Upright Citizens
Yes, oh
Brigade.
Yeah. With
Back
Adam
in the
McKay
day, here
yeah,
in Chicago.
Right.
They started out as a troupe here out of Improv Olympic, all students of Del Close. And it was a group of you, even before Amy joined. It was you, Adam McKay, Matt and Matt, Ian.
And Ali Farnakian.
Ali Farnakian. So, OG.
And you had the fame story, which is a great. We tell the story of you doing the bit, and I think it was the theater in Wicker Park where you did the protest of the new Rostenkowski bridge. Oh, yeah. I think it was, and you took the protest to the streets, and you actually got arrested.
Well, you know, our show is virtual reality before virtual reality. For some reason, Besser knew about virtual reality, so our show is called Virtual Reality. And so, one night we did a show at Urbis Orbis on North Avenue, and we had a virtual riot. And so we had some torches, and we had mostly fake torches that are very popular these days.
Khaki pants.
And then we started a riot, and I went out into North Avenue, and I was screaming, "Killed Rostenkowski," because he had been
like they were going to put the bridge was out or something like that.
He had been in some kind of scandal, and so his office was right down the street there on Damon. And so we were saying, "Kill Rostenkowski, kill Rostenkowski." And so then traffic stopped on both sides of North Avenue. And I'm like, holy crap, we're like stopping traffic. And then I felt the blue glow on my face of the police department. And I'm like, oh no, okay, here we go. And it's like, do I give up the bit? And I'm like, no, I have to keep yelling, "Kill Rostenkowski." And as I was being thrown into the cop car, I'm yelling, "Fight the power, fight the power."
But cut to 3 seconds in the cop car.
3 seconds. I'm like, I'm just an actor. Please don't put me in jail. I'm an improviser. I'm a fucking family. I mean, but as I was getting in the car, like the crowd just saw me saying "fight the power." And the greatest part of it is we didn't think a cop was going to come, but that audience saw me get arrested, and they're like, "Did they plan that? Like, did they know someone, a comp or somebody?
And that story is lore for Chicago Improv. Everybody who came up after you guys knew that story, knew how edgy and dangerous it was.
Getting like, arrested, old
Getting arrested in improv was everyone's goal from that point.
Well, good luck, everybody.
All right, let's bring a caller. This is Gregory. Gregory wants to talk to Joe. Gregory, you're on the line.
Hello.
Hello? I can't hear you, sir. You have to speak up. Is this a question for Joe or for Horatio?
Joe.
Okay.
I'm not.
You're on the air.
Is it your family?
This is my dad calling.
He got nervous already. He was shy.
Tell him if he wants a burrito autographed by Horatio Sanz, he has to talk to me. Or if he wants a Luma and Lottie's pizza. Huh?
No, he doesn't want to talk now because he's so embarrassed.
Well,
this is your mother. This is your mother.
That's my mother, Rosemary Robles. Hi, Mama.
Hi, Joe's Mama.
Hi, Joe's Mom.
Hi, Joe's Mom.
Horatio.
Hi, Uncle Mondo.
Hi, Kira. That's Minnie's. Okay, they're all vacationing in San Diego right now, so.
All right. Yeah, that's a great place to be. That's great. Well, thanks for calling in. That's great.
Thank you.
Bye, new nephew.
My dad, tell dad he can't feed you guys tonight because he wouldn't talk to me.
Wait, now my dad's going to call. No, he's dead.
Oh,
mine
no.
too.
Mine too.
Both all right.
Scott, do an impression.
You want to go get a burrito, son?
Yes, daddy. Let's go to Juan Titan.
Personally, I'll go there with you, but I think La Pasadita has a better product.
Get out of here, Dad.
And scene.
All right, Horatio Sanz will be, this is the an evening with SNL alum Horatio Sanz, Conversations in Comedy. The interview with Richard Roper, will be doing the interview with Horatio. The tour of the SNL exhibit begins at 6 o'clock. The actual discussion is at 7:30 at the Museum of Broadcast Communication right here at State and Kinsey. Horatio Sanz and Joe Nunez and Scott Goldstein all in for the Cubs home opener. Did you guys get screwed over yesterday with the snow day, or did that help you?
I gotta say, it helped me so much because I was super hungover, and so I did press it like six. And God shined the light on me and canceled the game.
He canceled the game.
And today was beautiful.
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 So, what do you guys? Last thing here before I let you guys go. What do you think of the Cubs this season? Do you like what you see on the field?
I think they put a lot of money into the team, and I think that they've got the pitching staff nice and filled out, stacked. And I really do feel as good as about this year as I did in 2016. Let's say that.
Wow. Yeah, I think
right, Scott.
Today was that bullpen, right? Deep. Today was the last loss we're going to see all season.
Oh, look at that prediction!
We're going to go.
It's going to be tough. The Pirates team is, what, 8-2 now?
They're pretty good.
They're good for a team that was supposed to be rebuilding, the Pirates.
Whatever.
Just saying. Hey, I don't want to rain on your parade.
It's April. Let's just say it's April. I can tell you, those 94 Cubs look good on opening day.
They did not. That's okay. I remember that. All right, Horatio Sanz, Joe Nunez, they'll be leaving us. Good to see you guys. Scott's sticking around. Good luck with the show on Thursday. And next time you guys are in town, come on through.
Always a pleasure.
Next time we come back, I want to see... At the download,
hashtag. Yeah.
I want you to have your own.
Well, I hope that as we were figuring out Twitter, you did use the down loaf. I think that is the new name of the show. The down.
It's the best thing since sliced bread. It's the down loaf.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Yeah, that should be okay. Bye.
Coming up, we're playing the worst. 773 said Pasadena. Pick one. 773 said Ruby's. Another said Taco Burrito King. I'm trying to guess Horatio's favorite burrito place. He said it. I forgot it already. Great to have those guys come through. Both in L.A. Like I said, Horatio will be at the Museum of Broadcast Communications coming up on Thursday. You can see him in Great News, which right now I think is between seasons. I like that show a lot. It's funny. It's got that 30 Rock vibe to it. I don't know the names of the actors on the show. Brad Morris is on the show, longtime Chicago Second City guy who's been on the program. But the guy who was in Best in Show, who played Michael McKean's boyfriend, husband, who's a famous actor. He's in so many great things. He plays the newscaster on that show on Great News. He's really, really good. And Horatio's good, too.
And Tina Fey plays the show, too. So anyway. So coming up, we're going to play The Worst, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. And I think I still retained all our prizes. Joe was after each and every one of them. I had said at the beginning of the show, the worst was saline solution. And I have gotten so much response. Like people telling me about how it's controlled by Big Pharma. Right, right there. And then there was a great, someone actually was telling me how to make saline solution at home. It's like, I'm going to get to it. I'm going to find it. But it's essentially, I used to buy, 847, I used to buy salt tablets in the right concentration to make my own saline solution with distilled water.
Uh-huh.
Ask your pharmacist.
A little science project for you for the weekend.
Another person's like, why even deal with saline? Just get the daily disposables. And then I responded saying, yeah, but you still need saline for that. And they're like, no, only if your eyes get irritated. I have a whole conversation about eye care. It's like, you never know what you get on the down loaf.
It's going down, y'all. Come the worst, my people come first.
Yes, yes, thanks, Rob. It's a download, 720 WGN, and it's time for The Worst, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can text, you can call. The best worsts of the night are going to get you a desktop indoor weather station or a Lumel Nauti's gift certificate. And our panel of judges tonight are two regulars to the download, Scott Goldstein and Mars Timms. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you.
All right, so let's get to the plugs. Of course, Mars does Pimprov in town, one of the best shows, improv shows in Chicago at CIC Theater, 1422 West Irving Park Road. That's on Friday nights.
Yes, it is. We are in our 15th year.
15th year
of Pimprov. Yeah, man.
Love that show.
Thank you. Thank you. We do a lot of great stuff. You know, all of our charitable stuff, you know, domestic abuse shelters, Toys for Tots at Christmas, and our Thanksgiving basket of thanks that we give out to the needy.
Look at that.
Yeah, man.
Oh, let's go right
just
to the
like real pimps.
Just like real pimps. Scott Goldstein's here, and he wants to, not only is he a world-class improviser, which you can see him, last time you were on, I was like, did I just see you in the background of Curb Your Enthusiasm? And it was Scott just hanging out in the hotel lobby of a Larry David sketch. But he's also a restaurateur. You're an investor.
I'm an investor. I'm an enabler of a talented chef.
There you go. And the it's a great restaurant, Logan Square, called Daisy's. It just won the Ben Shea Award for Best Neighborhood Restaurant, and it just opened brunch. So there you go.
Yeah.
It's so refreshing to not have to say, and you can get tickets at.
You could see Kukoc and Pip in my independent improv group.
Yeah. There you go. It's a great name, by the way. 312-981-7200. All right, well, let's start the worst the way we start every worst with Pete Zimmerman. Pete? All right.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you're on one of these conference calls with multiple people and somebody doesn't have their phone muted.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Are you familiar with this concept?
Mm-hmm. That's an issue here at the station. We get a lot of unmuted phones where it's just like someone going through a wind tunnel.
Yeah. These are important conversations you're having with the boss types, big ideas being bandied about. That's all you hear. All right, that's it.
Have you ever had anyone conference you in on a call while calling into the show? Have they ever been on
like
a conference call with other people?
No, I haven't done. That's good. That's a good bit. Yeah. I think there's so much to mine. You mind so much from conference call etiquette and humor.
Corporate comedy conference calls are always fun because it's 25 minutes of bits, and by the time you're 25 minutes in, everybody's forgotten who the client is and what's going on, and then you hang up and nothing got done.
Nothing got done. Been there many a time. 312-981-7200. All right, Mars, what do you got for the worst?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
When you pull into a parking garage that it has valet, and some person walks up and gives you their keys while you're still sitting in your car waiting to give your keys away.
That's hilarious. What do you do in that situation?
I was like, I don't work here.
I had that happen to me the other day.
Yeah.
Same thing. I was outside of a restaurant with my puffy jacket on and my hat, and somebody came up and was like, what's the deal on the valet? And I'm like, it's in the...
Yeah, you're right.
And I did it to somebody else. I did it to a guy who was...
He looked just like the guy that he had the hipster beard. He was outside the Ace Hotel in the West Loop. And I was looking for my car, and I went up to the guy who's standing right in front of the valet. He's standing at the valet, and I'm like, "Hey, it's the gray CRV." And he's like, "I don't work here." I'm like, "All right, well then get away from the stand."
I know it's just so hard. I've done it to people in like Target or whatever, and it's just, they're like, "Do you see me with a red blazer on?" I'm like, "I'm sorry."
I don't know if somebody gave you their keys though. I'd take a look, see what the car is, and maybe trade them.
Yeah,
like just take those keys. Sure.
It's got to be etiquette there. There's
that's technically
etiquette.
Not a theft. It was a gift. They gave me the keys.
They gave you the keys.
John Benjamin had that great show. John Benjamin has a van on Comedy Central, which was just a prank show. This was a couple, like 10, 15 years ago. And it was a very short-lived show, but he did a bit on that show that I love so much. He went to eBay, and he bought a Staples polo, red Staples polo. And so he put it on, and he had a little camera, like an undercover camera, and he went into Staples. And people come up to him, and they'd say, what aisle is the paper? He's like, "Oh, I don't work here."
My dad used to specifically go down to the Bally's on Michigan Avenue, and he would open the door for people. Like, some days he would just walk down there and just start opening the door as if he did
work
there.
As if he worked there.
Yeah.
What was the reason? What was it?
I mean, you know.
Just for...
Just that got his thing going. That got his thing going.
It was a phase. He went through a phase. He just wanted to open the door.
Wow,
at the Bally's.
I like that.
Open the door. And, you know, it's like, I think it's like, you know, when older people, you know, they, mm-hmm. they want to go do something with themselves.
Right.
They would, you know, that's like the greeter at Walmart.
Yeah, right.
Why not?
Yeah. My dad drives a school bus now.
He does?
Yeah. That's he retired for like a few years, and then he got tired of golfing most days, and he was like, "I'm going to go drive a school bus."
I like that, John.
I was like, "You never, ever took me and my sister to school. Now you want to drive."
Now he's compensating.
He's
trying to make up for everything.
Yeah,
give the man a break. He's trying to reach you. By connecting with other children.
Yes.
Scott, what do you got for the worst?
I don't know. The worst. I don't like to think about things negatively, but I'd say the worst is everything right now. But let's try to narrow it down to something. I've had it with the news. I watch the news compulsively. In the last 2 days, thanks to the, you know, I've tried to tear myself away from it. Mm-hmm. But I'm supposed to be funny, so if I'm going to be funny, I can't really talk about the news because it gives me a headache.
Well, it's funny because they will. There's a TV in the studio, and it's the one closest to it. Yeah, and it's got the CNN. It's got CNN, and they do the scrawl.
And it's always breaking news.
It's now there's always breaking.
It's only breaking news.
Same story. And I'm on a 4-hour shift, so if I start at 7 o'clock and I look at the 10:48, and they're saying breaking, and it's scrolling the same story. That's not breaking anymore.
From like 1978 until 1987, I got all of my news from Walter Jacobson and Bill Curtis,
mm-hmm.
occasionally Carol Marine and Ron Majors.
Ooh, Ron Majors! And what they, a head
you
of
know,
hair!
It's not always breaking news.
Yeah, right.
It can't be.
It can't
There's a
be.
Guy taking a picture right now. That's the worst. You broke my concentration.
He's got a Buffalo Bills hat on.
Hi, everybody.
312-981-7200. All right, here's what we'll do.
The Bills fan, you got to feel for them.
You got to feel.
That's
yeah.
the worst.
You know what's the worst?
Scott Norwood's kick is the
Bills
worst.
Fan.
I apologize. Anyone in Buffalo, Scott Norwood's kick was the worst.
Let's
but
do
I
this.
Like
let's,
Scott
let's
Norwood.
Let's go to Jen. Let's do Jen, then we'll take a quick break. Jen, what's the worst, Jen?
Hi. The worst? Hi. Well, here's the story. So, you know how you go to the grocery store and you're all hungry and you want to get some fresh food? And they have, like, that fresh salad bar, food bar. Mm. And they're trying to, like, attract you to, you know, hey, just get this food. You don't have to cook at home. It's totally fresh. You know, they make it look as good as possible. But you know it's not fresh.
Yeah.
But you're thinking about eating it anyway. So my husband and I were at a grocery store not that long ago, and we're getting some snacks for a party. And we stroll past this bar, and we're just like, we do a double take. We're like, what is that? So they had like these chicken wings in one of these fresh bars, and someone had helped themselves to like probably about 5 of them, just ate them clean, like to the bone, and just discarded
just
the
bones. Just put the bones like, back in
the
basket.
No! Yeah, no, but like the basket where you get like all the plasticware that you're supposed to take to like eat, you know, if you go for lunch. So it was just really.
So someone's just like, you know what? So I'm fresh. No one's looking, so I'm going to chow as much of the wings I can at the Jewel.
So, like, it was impressive. Like they had like 5 of them. Like nobody cared. They just didn't care if it was fresh. They're just like, you know what? Just let them have it. And so it
I mean, it's truly fresh if you're eating it right there at the fresh.
Yeah, can I ask a question? Where is this salad bar that has chicken wings? Because that's where I need to start shopping.
It was, you know, I won't say, but
you can say it's like Dominic's.
They got wings at Dominic's. They got wings at Dominic's.
We got baby back ribs.
Thanks, Jen.
Moo and oink. Moo and oink. You know, Mars and I once played twin brothers in a show?
Yes.
17 years ago.
17 what? Years
yes. ago. All right, well, let's get that story after the break. Here's Scott Goldstein, Mars Timms in studio. They are the panel tonight for The Worst, 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
It's going down,
playing The Worst tonight, 312-981-7200. Mars Timms, Scott Goldstein, who played twins 17 years ago on stage together, reunited tonight on The Worst.
That joke probably isn't as funny on the radio.
Yes.
They don't look alike.
We look. Well, yeah.
Was
no.
it an improv show? Was it? What was it?
It was scripted.
It was a scripted show. It was called Eat Lead Jackass. Mm-hmm. And it was the last.
Where was it?
It was the last.
Annoyance Theater on Clark.
At the Annoyance Theater when it was at 3747
wow,
North Clark.
Yeah, that was yeah. great. I love that place.
It had one performance only.
Yes. Yo, yeah. You want to talk about a performance for the ages? Bottle of bourbon?
Course
of that show.
I thought it was fun. We were doing a Western, and we were playing, we were Civil War veteran brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We were twins, and we were 140 years old.
Yep.
And we had a bottle of bourbon, and I said, you know, this bottle looks pretty authentically Western, and we drank it through the entire show.
Yeah.
As they were like, as the spotlight kept moving, they kept turning off the spotlight on us, and we kept talking. And I looked down, and it was like, it said it was a, was it a hundred, it, how many, what's that? It was like 116 proof?
Yeah, it was fire water. And I don't even drink
like
that.
I love it.
That was a great lesson. That was the only time I ever drank during a show. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad I could reunite the two of you.
Well, occasionally we were backup dancers for the Screw Puppies. You drank during that show.
Yeah. Case of beer.
This is improv history right here. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones and the text here. Aaron says, when you're waiting at a stoplight, it turns green, but the guy in front of you does not move because he's probably playing with his phone. Finally, the car moves, and he's the last one to make it through the light. That's the worst.
Yeah, that's a bad person right there. That's a person you don't want to know.
That's a bad person.
It's a bad person.
708 says, the worst is when your customer service call is answered by a robot, and then you hear that fake typing noise when you provide your information. That is the worst.
It's also bad when you're fooled initially by the robot.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Representative.
My favorite fool worst is Pete Zimmerman classic, one of the first ones he ever did, where the worst is when you accidentally like a sponsored post on Instagram.
Oh, yes.
And you're like, oh, yeah, it's a nice picture. Like,
I'm susceptible. I'm susceptible to psyops.
Yeah. I always do it. I like it. And then I'll look and I'll say sponsor. And I'm like, unlike.
Got me.
I mean, Facebook is the worst.
Yeah, Facebook is the worst.
But I know the two of you don't get off it and I don't get off it.
Yeah, right.
I got to promote shows.
You got to promote shows.
Yeah.
Yep. 847, the worst is driving with helium balloons in your car.
Is that it? Is that a period or a comma?
That's it.
Yeah, if you're the old guy from Up.
Yeah. Exactly. 773 says overcooked pasta.
Ooh, that's a big one. And you'll never have overcooked pasta at Daisy's, 2523 North Milwaukee, known for its pasta.
Always working. That's why I like you. That's why we're brothers.
708's got a good one. The worst is sitting next to a guy at a Bulls game who has to fist bump you every time they score.
You know, I was that kid. So when growing up going to Bulls games, there was a guy named Leroy who sat next to us, and he had
one
seat. Come on.
Leroy was sitting next to you at the Bulls game.
Yes, he had one
seat. You've never sat in the 300 section.
No, and neither did Leroy. He would leave his family. Leroy, if you're out there, please
Leroy
call
would
in.
Leave his family? Oh, now we're going here.
No, he would come to the games. He loved basketball so much he would come to the games. And this is the first television appearance I ever had that wasn't on the local news. Was we would high-five each other after every sweet dunk. And there were a lot of sweet dunks in the late 80s and early 90s. Yeah. And they put us in a Sports Illustrated commercial, but it wasn't with the Bulls. It's just us, young man, older man, high-fiving. And then all of a sudden, we're on a Sports Illustrated commercial. You see Magic Johnson dribbling the ball at an All-Star game, shooting a three, and then you see me and Leroy stand up and high-five.
Oh,
it took us out of context.
No. See, we need
broke my heart.
Yeah, we needed that story back in the 80s when that was on, right?
You're right.
We needed to know that context back then. They tricked us. That's
what I knew. The world was a lie. Right. That and I ran contra. Magic Johnson at the All-Star game is my Watergate.
That your high five with Leroy made America go, I think we like Magic Johnson.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, otherwise we wouldn't have known. So
nope.
There you go.
Especially not in this state.
All right, let's go to Jasmine's on the line. Jasmine, what's the worst, Jasmine?
Three words.
snow in April.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you,
Jackson. I got up for school yesterday, and when I went outside, I was like, really? This is still happening?
I know, right? And I heard the weather person say that this could be the coldest April in history, Chicago history.
And what really sucked, the Cubs home game was supposed to be yesterday.
Yes.
So... I don't know if I can say that on a White Sox station, but...
You're okay,
Do you know what's the worst? That this is a White Sox station. I was at the game today, and I looked up, and you see, watch the Cubs on ABC7. Listen on 670 The Score. And I'm saying, where am I living?
Yeah.
What world is this? They moved the dugout. They they changed
everything. There's no more yum-yum donuts.
That's, right. You know, at least... I didn't go west on Addison. Thank you, Jasmine. Is yesterday still there?
Yes, I don't know. Yes. You know what? My cousin Eric worked in Yesterday's for a long time. I don't think that place is there anymore. I think that they just shut it down. No. I read a story that said it was on its last leg.
See, I don't walk west anymore after the games, and I always used to walk past Yesterday, and you're like, if as long as this yellow shanty that is leaning strongly to the right.
My cousin Eric said, I'm working down at Yesterday. I'm like, what?
You can have your Taco Bell and your McDonald's down there. Yeah, give me Yesterday.
Right. Oh, man, that shack.
773 says the worst is when you go to the bank on payday and then you realize you have to wait another week because you get paid every 2 weeks and you got the week wrong. There's a lot going on there.
Living day to day.
That's just America.
That's just America. The worst is getting poison ivy in your eyes, and then if that's not bad enough, it was the day before a job interview.
Yeah, That's a tough one.
That's the worst. It is the worst.
That is pretty bad.
You got some categories on the worst. You'll get the ones that are funny, obnoxious, annoyances. You'll get the ones that are I'm so angry. And then there's the real worst.
Legitimate nightmares, usually, like a David Lynch nightmare.
Poison ivy in the eyes, cancer falls in that area. You usually get those.
I'm putting cancer worse than poison ivy in the eyes.
Okay, it's right. But they're close.
They're neck and neck.
They're neck and neck.
I think, yeah.
331 says, the worst is when GPS directs you to the back roads in the middle of nowhere in Indiana instead of having you hop on the interstate that you were driving parallel for a few miles. Only reason I found out is because the road was blocked by a stopped freight train. And so then it directed me to the highway.
Those are tough, too. I've been there going to shows like out in like who knows where, like Beloit, Wisconsin, which I'll be at tomorrow night.
Hilarious.
Before you drive to Beloit, stop at Daisy's. 25.
I'll be at the Moose Lodge in Beloit, Wisconsin. At 7
They're probably listening. It's in our listening range.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Moose Lodge.
You don't
have
to whisper it.
I'll be at the Moose Lodge out there in Beloit, Wisconsin, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Come through and check me out.
That.
Beloit has a quality dining scene, and that's not a bit. Beloit, Wisconsin has a quality dining scene.
It's a good little college town.
Really? Yeah, it's a great college town. Yeah. I did not know that.
Beloit College, right?
Met a lot of cool college people.
Mars Dim, Scott Goldstein in studio tonight. We're playing the worst. We're at the halfway point. The texts are still coming in, as well as the lines. We got Arnold is on the phone right now, but Arnold, I'm going to take a break, get the news, so stick tight, and we'll get you right after Rob's news update. It's a download. Stay with us. It's a download. It's the worst. 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here with Mars Timms and Scott Goldstein. Arnold has been waiting patiently to play the worst tonight. He sat through the last break in the newscast, so let's go right to Arnold. Arnold, what's the worst, bud?
The worst. The deep state potbelly goblins. Hillary for president. InfoWars.com. InfoWars.com.
Is that it? That's what
you waited all that time for that?
And I'm not even sure if that was real or satire.
What?
Is that a plug?
We just got pranked for a guy who's waited 8 minutes. So who's really who really got pranked?
You lost that one. You lost. Thanks, Arnold. Go back to eating your potbelly subs.
I feel good.
I'm pro potbelly subs. I'm anti the rest of that.
Anti gibberish.
815 says the worst are all these remakes of TV shows that weren't all that good the first time around. I'm waiting for...
Are they poking fun at Roseanne?
I'm waiting for the Step by Step reunion. Are they going to do a reboot of Step by Step? Or with Suzanne Summers?
Because Suzanne Summers was a Trump voter. Yeah. Is Patrick Duffy still
Patrick
alive?
Duffy?
No, Patrick Duffy's dead.
He is
dead, right?
Well, they could still do a reboot.
Or am I thinking of Michael Landon? Well, wasn't John Goodman's character supposed to do that? You confuse my, it's the hair. You're confusing the hair.
Okay.
One was Little House of the Prairie, and the other one was Bobby Ewing.
Dallas, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was Man from Atlantis.
I'm sorry.
I think Man from Atlantis, that weird swim that he'd have.
My favorite thing about Michael Landon is if you go to Vegas and you get some of the, like the Italian Batistas, the Italian restaurant off of the strip, just off the strip, it's like a famous place. There are like 40 pictures of Michael Landon in there, like eating. I mean, he was a Vegas like guy. And people don't think about that, but he was like a total Vegas like.
No, I think of him. I would imagine him more like a Branson guy.
Yeah, no, he was a
sizzler.
Well, I mean, Vegas was Branson back in the '70s, right? That's when Landon was hanging out.
Branson with syphilis.
Chris Duffy or Patrick Duffy still alive?
He is. Okay, sorry, Patrick Duffy. If you by any chance hear this,
he's not here by now.
Right? And I admire the fact that you've stepped out of the public spotlight because I think that's healthy.
His nephew is a major league. Former, I don't know if he's still a major league pitcher, but Barry Zito.
Oh, Barry Zito.
That's his nephew.
That's a great baseball name, Barry
Both
Zito.
Had great hair. That's a genetic thing. That's a genetic thing in the family, that hair.
773 says you're in a cab, and the driver's eating a sandwich and talking on his cell phone, holding it. Then, when you go to pay, he's mad that you do not have cash. Did I tell... I've told this story on the show. I have so much anxiety about that. About paying, using your credit card in a cab.
I have had a bad experience with it.
And no, we all have.
I like to use cash in a cab.
I will walk.
Yeah.
Before I use my card in a cab. I mean, and now the technology's caught up, right? My wife, she'll be like, "You're an idiot." She's like, you're thinking of 1998. This is now 2018, 20 years later. Go to New York City.
Same cab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right?
Yes.
Same. Go to New York, take the cab to the hotel. And I got a card because my wife convinced me that, and the machine wouldn't work. And the guy's like, "Do you have cash?" And I'm like, "I don't." And he drove me around New York trying to find a cash machine.
So he lost money, Bernie. He could have just let you go.
It was the worst case scenario for this paranoid, anxious, cash-only cab guy.
They only want cash.
So now it's only cash.
Yeah, so now I'm back to cash. I'll never do a card.
I respect that. It's a cash, you know.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it. That's why it drives her crazy, because if we're ever at the airport and I grab a cab, I always lean in first, go, "You take a card? You just do cash?" Like, I try to negotiate that.
No, my friend. Yeah. Traveler's checks.
What do you got? What can be used here? 312-981-7200. Chuck, what's the worst, Chuck?
The worst is there'll be no beer sales at Wrigley Field this year.
No beer sales at Wrigley Field?
I contributed mightily to that today.
They lost the opener.
Because they lost the... Oh! That's a great joke! They lost the opener. The beer opener.
I got to give you credit for that.
That's
one.
That's a good one,
How long
Chuck?
Did you wait to do that?
Oh, he was quick on there.
That was good. That was dry, too. That was a good delivery.
Wow. That might be a winner right there. That might be worth a pizza, right?
Thanks, Chuck.
I mean that's a pretty good
one. I'll buy him a pizza.
Okay.
You can't go rogue.
No,
you're just
okay.
The format, like, now you're just throwing prizes out. You just
want
to buy
pizza
for people.
Call
are we,
in,
are we buying
get
stuff
a pizza.
For people?
I'm not. I'm going to use. Do you take cash?
I'm going to buy Chuck a throat lozenge. That's what I'm buying.
Tell them they take a card and be like, "Oh, the machine's not working."
I like Chuck. Chuck has a great voice for telling a joke like that.
Yeah, that was great. It was slow.
I appreciate you, Chuck.
Patient.
You guys liked it.
He got me in. I took the hook.
630 says the worst is thinking you'll get a refund on your taxes instead you owe big time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty
bad. That's
bad.
That's
not good.
That falls into the poison ivy in the eyes.
I think we
it's in, it's in the top bad. 10. It's a classic. It's an archetype.
Yeah. The worst is doing an interview with a possible new employee and they have a strong, nauseating, heinous, brutal smell of BO.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah.
But at least you have the power not to... Is that a EEOC issue if you don't hire someone because of their BO?
Yeah, I don't think you can ask.
You can't ask what the BO is?
But you can have
you
them back
smell.
For a second interview, and if they stink the second time, it's just like, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, this isn't going to work. You're not going to be able to work in this factory with that old factory.
You're not going to be able to do this. I thought I'd have you back, but it's just not going to work out. Thank you for coming in.
847 is the worst is turning on the garbage disposal only to have a bunch of black slimy muck fly into your face. Oof.
Ooh. In your face?
My second fear beyond the cab and the cash is that I have accidentally dropped a fork down there and I don't know about it.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
What about the fear of accidentally, you know, reaching for that fork and then somebody turns the switch?
That's like right out of
a you're in an 80s horror movie.
Yeah, horror movie, right?
Hand in the garbage disposal. That's a bad one.
The worst cystriosis is when you eat inside a Burger King and it doesn't have a self-serve pop machine.
Pot machine?
Pop.
Oh, pop machine. It doesn't have a self-serve. Oh, because you can't do the suicide otherwise. You can't take a little bit of every flavor.
Delicious. Yeah. Oh, man, the suicide.
Just a touch of...
What Burger King doesn't have... I mean, who doesn't have a self-serve at this point?
Is that like a... on Irving Park right off of... right off of
Clark Street. Yeah, they don't have one. That is that's a bad Burger King.
They even have a handwritten sign that they post on the drive-thru that says $1 for a cookie.
Oh, man, here's a good
My friend threw his retainer in the garbage there in 1987 and had to go through the garbage of that Burger King.
Oh, come on.
We were on a bike ride through Chicago. We were visiting Graceland Cemetery with our 8th grade class.
That is a good cemetery to
run it's a great one. Yeah. You see all the baseballs. And, and then he went to the Burger King and he threw his retainer in the trash, and you don't just throw those away.
No,
you can't come home without that.
But it was at the school, the cafeteria. That's easy.
Yeah, I mean it's
Burger King on Irving
and Clark.
No,
I'm not going in that garbage.
I'd give up that $350 or whatever it was for that thing.
I'd have to go home and be like, "Hey, mom, dad, do what you're gonna do, but I'm not going in that garbage."
What'd you expect me? 847 says the worst is when you eat a bowl of linguine and it has hair twined in it.
That's pretty bad, and that would never happen to you at Daisy's. All the linguine is hair-free and homemade. Housemade.
Oh. Housemade. All right.
Sans hair.
Here, this one goes back. This goes into the poison ivy and the eyes category. 406 says the worst is taking care of an incontinent parent with Alzheimer's because you know you have to because you love them to death.
Oh, my God. That's
right? That's what I'm saying. Like, you get some real ones. You get real ones. It's like the That's a real one. That's terrible.
But that's a good person who's doing that. You are the opposite of the person who is at the red light, then the light goes green, and then they sit there texting, and then they're the only one through the light. You go to heaven. The other person goes to hell.
That's
you go
the
to
spectrum, heaven,
but you don't
you
win
one
the
over
pizza
here?
On this show.
You take care of an elderly parent, a grandparent, a stranger. You're an angel and a saint. You don't drive at a green light. You're the worst person ever.
What if they're all in the same, one in the same, the elderly parent?
Then you're allowed one a year.
Yeah, one a year.
You get one a year. Okay. If you're taking care, if you're texting the elderly parent at that time,
and they're a stranger,
let's keep moving here. 708. The worst: eating crab legs at a buffet, looking at everyone piling up empty shells, the sound of people eating and cracking. It's disgusting. Is there a crab buffet? I guess it is. Yeah,
Joomer's Casino in Rock Island.
You can tell Mars is a stand-up comedian.
There was a crab buffet in the 1914 club today. They had crab and shellfish. I don't know if they're going to... I don't think they're going to do that for every game.
Yeah.
Crab and shellfish. Crab is not...
I guess that's how you get crab,
The process of crabbing at a buffet is not as pleasant as eating the crab yourself. Watching other people eat crab is disgusting.
Yeah.
Don't watch them eat crab at Joomer's Casino in Rock Island. And I'm horrible with food and just the slightest thing will turn me off and stop me from eating. Yeah, Joomer's Casino.
Isn't it all you can eat crab leg?
It is. It is at the buffet. And some guy who I assume was a street person came up and gave me a coupon to discount me getting crab legs. I didn't take it.
Nice to know where you'll draw the line.
I was like,
free food.
I'll draw a lot of free food.
Mars Dim, Scott Goldstein in studio. We got a lot more. We'll rapid fire after the last break here. We're playing the worst. Complain about the worst things in society for prizes. We got Lou Malnati's to give away tonight. So stick around. Playing the worst, 312-981-7200. Still got a lot to get through tonight. Scott Goldstein, Mars Tim's here. Still got a way to come. I mean, we just went through what we have as the leaders, but there's no doubt that you can come in at this point and with steel.
It's anybody's game.
Yeah. We need like cool 80s, no whammies kind of music to play at the end of the worst when we get to the steel round.
No whammies.
No whammies. Yeah. No whammies.
No whammies. Let's go to Catherine. Catherine, what's the worst, Catherine?
Hi. Hi. The worst to me is someone coming into the Dollar Tree store, mm-hmm. and for a buck or two, they're spending, and they pay with their phone. can't even afford a dollar.
They're efficient.
With their phone.
I don't know if they can't afford. They have organized their lives digitally.
It's exciting to pay with your phone when you get the opportunity. Maybe it's their first time. You know, they're like, I just started to pay with this phone.
It's saving trees.
It was the first time for me, and it was like technology is just no.
This is the theme tonight is cash and carry. This is a cash. This is a cash favorable show.
Thanks, Catherine.
Technology.
Okay, thank you.
847 with a coming in for the steal. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
No whammies.
Wow.
No whammies.
This is going to be a winner. After 25 years of marriage, you find out your wife has a separate checking and savings account in her maiden name.
Whoa! No! That is the worst.
This struck a chord with Mars.
That is the worst. You want?
In theory, yes. But what if?
What if
your wife has been using that checking and savings account to buy you things so you wouldn't know about them? So that's
what?
And she's been saving that money in the savings account. As a
maybe
surprise.
It's retirement. Yeah, maybe
there's a car driving down Michigan Avenue without your lights on. If you are in a white Prius, turn your lights on.
That's the wife that has a separate checking and savings account.
Yeah,
trying
maybe
to get
maybe,
away from her husband.
Maybe it's one of these things where, when confronted, she's like, "Well, I was saving this to buy you a new car."
Right, and you know, people are nosy. The neighbors gossip, and this is a way to keep things private.
No,
I would
I wouldn't buy any of it.
Wow.
And she would be buying everything from that account.
How much is in that account? Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, lots of questions, follow up questions on that one.
Yeah.
All right, we'll keep going. 219. The worst is when you pick up a can of whatever to take a sip and you realize someone's been using it as their ashtray. That's classic.
Been there.
That was like my 20s. Yeah. That was like that's a recurring. It happened.
Yeah.
Continued to happen.
You always look at the edge of the old style can. Look for those ashes.
Yeah. Keystone.
Oh,
yeah, Keystone might as well just be an ashtray.
Yeah, it basically is. You open it fresh, and you're drinking an ashtray.
That's why they line the can, so it won't catch on fire.
Yeah, right. Great tasting of bottled beer and an ashtray.
847 says the worst, and this actually happened, making dinner with jalapeno peppers, not washing your hands, getting frisky with your wife. We had this one.
The last time I was on.
Yeah, I think it's the same.
Is this
one.
My stalker? Do you need me to answer this? Because it is the worst.
630 says the worst is sticky, gross salt and pepper shakers or ketchup that have never been properly washed off with soap and water in a restaurant.
That's why I take my own salt and pepper
to the
restaurant.
You bring packets with you?
You go to a restaurant that seasons its food perfectly so you don't even need salt and pepper condiments on the table like Daisy's at 2523 North Milwaukee.
They don't even put it on there. They're so confident. 847 says the worst, men who wear pinky rings.
That would be my father.
And I'd be afraid to insult a man who wears a pinky ring,
because
you just never know.
He wears a pinky ring and he paints his pinky fingernail.
Really?
What?
Yes. Is that for the ladies?
That is for the ladies.
Does he paint his fingernail while he's driving the school bus?
He does. He had like a little spider, like little thing, like painted on there.
He's got like a press on.
That's what it looks like.
And this is the school bus driver.
This is my father. Oh, the
he's
school
setting
bus
himself
driver.
Up to get to be in lore. There's gonna be a story for these kids.
Grammar school kids can be very cruel. Yeah. And I was like, why do you want to? I told him. I was like,
I want just one of those bullies to try picking on me. I'm a grown man. I'm a grown man with a pinky ring. I'll kill those kids.
I will pull this bus over.
I will pull it over and murder all of you.
You messing with Mr. Timms? Nah.
You see this pinky ring? They don't just give this to anybody.
No, you
I'm going to earn it.
It's a badge of honor.
I bought this on the side of the road in Colorado with a mine for silver at.
I was in the Yakuza. I will kill you all.
I can't even spell Yakuza.
847 says the worst pants. And just that, right? 847 says the worst is people, this is good, who shower naked in public restrooms at swimming pools in the communal rinsing showers.
Well, if you have a curtain, it's okay.
Yeah.
But, oh,
no,
communal,
anyone,
like oh,
communal, like if it's like just
like in
one
Cary.
Shower.
Like anyone? The old gym shower. The old gym shower
was fine.
You know what the worst is? Watching the swim team shave their legs and watching all the blood roll down in your middle school locker room.
Ugh. Do you own a pinky ring?
I do not have a pinky ring. I didn't earn one yet.
You gotta earn a pinky ring. You're not just giving.
I don't have the right
ring.
To wear one.
To earn a pinky
all
ring.
Right, I think we got it.
Start
all
with
right.
a sleeveless shirt.
You can see Pimprov, Mars Tim's, CIC Theater, 1422 West Irving Park, every Friday night, 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you can go have brunch with Scott Goldstein at Daisy's, which won the Ben Shea Award for Best Neighborhood Restaurant. And they just started brunch in Logan Square.
Yeah, we haven't even been open a year. We'll be open a year.
It's getting great reviews, and congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I mean, I have very little to do with it. The chef is very talented, and all I do is say, you're doing a great job.
You're doing a great job.
Everybody's doing a great job.
All right, this is what we're giving away. We're, of course, going to give a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by the American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Also, a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, one of home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at lumalnati's.com. Oh boy.
Eat a lose while monitoring the coldest April in the history of Chicago.
All right.
Thank you, Chicago weather.
I love
all right, I think I got it. I mean, this is really good. I think it's, I always say it's the judges. The judges bring out the best, but there were so many great texts and calls. This was so good.
There were some good ones in there.
Let's start with the desktop indoor weather station. We'll give it to 847. The worst is getting poison ivy in your eyes.
Yeah, that is. Just terrible.
Let's throw it out there. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Especially a day before the job interview. That doesn't even matter. Poison ivy in the eyes.
Poison ivy in the eyes. Period. Then the electrical grid blacking out. Yeah. That's where it goes.
That's right.
First, poison ivy in the eyes.
All right. And let's get the pizza. Let's do this. Oh, wow. I don't know which account you take this one out of, 847, but you get a pizza for the worst being after 25 years of marriage, you find out your wife has a separate checking and savings account in her maiden name.
But at least you got a pizza.
At least you got a pizza.
Don't share it. Yeah.
Don't share it.
Eat it. Cry into it. Sleep on it.
It's yours.
Man.
And then first place tonight, I think you got to give it to Chuck and the call where he said, why are there no beer sales at Wrigley for the rest of the year? Because they lost the home opener.
I mean, that is one of
lost,
that's a great.
They lost the opener. I messed it up. I messed up Chuck's great joke.
See, you don't have Chuck's skill. If you would just take the time, you have to
patient.
Let that linger.
You've
got to have a little bit more gravel in your voice. But Chuck, great dad joke. That's
great
a top notch dad joke.
Top notch. You got a pizza tonight.
They lost
Chuck.
The opener.
There it is. Mars, Tim, Scott Goldstein. Great to have you guys. Good to see you.
Always the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.